Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, I love this show. I mean, I really love Thursday because we have the world's greatest doctor panel. And it's so much fun. We're sending messages back and forth. We're texting back and forth. We're doing all this crazy stuff. And it's really incredible. A couple of people even text, you know, what's the number again? which always cracks me up too. All right, I'm just putting the last, let me see who we've got now. Okay, that's Lindsay. So Lindsay's on too. All right. So Lindsay is our newest superstar. She was on the show yesterday and absolutely impressed the hell out of me. And so she's going to be joining our panel here today because we're going to be doing a lot of interesting stuff. We got some things from the Club of Rome. We got population, depopulation. I want to know about their psychology, their lack of spirituality, the inhumanity that these people seem to bring about. So we're going to go beyond just straight doctor stuff and straight COVID stuff. You all know the problems. We've talked about the problems. We've talked about the problems on my show for 2 years. And so at this point, with this incredible panel of people, I want to sort of gradually transfer from talking about the problems, except for the latest problems. You know, those kind of things I want to analyze. But I want to get into more strategy and things that we can do and broaden the horizons. I'm going to challenge our doctor's panel a little bit into some things like economics and philosophy, psychology, and some other things as we go. So what I want to do to open things up, of course, is we always start with the ringing of the Wuhan bell. Let me see if I can get my gong here going. Let's try this one more time. There we go. So what I'd like you to do, I've got four of you here now. We've got John, Jim, Ben, and Lindsay. Just give like a 1 or 2 minutes introduction of who you are. And again, if people want more detailed stuff, they can catch previous shows. And they'll find out who you are as we talk. But so let's welcome John Cullen to the show. John, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be here. Thank you. For those of you who are not familiar with my work, my name is John Cullen. I publish videos on YouTube, and I publish on Twitter. And my background, about 34 years ago, when I worked at Oracle, I was the guy who spearheaded geographic mapping systems with ESRI, and that's the system that the WHO and Johns Hopkins used to map the pandemic. So the mapping systems that you see and the data that's presented, I put that stuff together 34 years ago when I was at Oracle.
Yeah, John's amazing. He's also the perfect counter to my rather hyper voice and adrenaline paced speech patterns here. So John is like the calm, reassuring counterpart to that. Let's get Dr. Jim Thorpe on the line. And Jim, enter and sign in, please. Unmute your phone. See if you can wake up Jim Thorpe. He might be doing something. I mean, I joke around with that all the time, but a lot of these folks who are on the panel are actually still working. They're doing computer stuff. They're the math implementation thing. So it's a strange time of day to be able to do this, but it works out really well. But a lot of the reasons we do this is Dr. Judy Mikovits, who ironically is not with us today because she's on her way to a conference. So let's get Dr. Ben Marble, who has been missing for a couple of weeks, and we are so glad to have you back. Ben, tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll keep going here.
Hello,
yeah.
Greg.
Go for it.
Thanks for having me. This is Ben Marble. I'm the founder of MyFreeDoctor.com, and we're trying to do what we can to help save lives and get this poison banned and fight this war and win it.
There we go. And now Lindsay's saying to herself, what am I doing on this panel? I know exactly what she's saying to herself. We met for the first time yesterday. Lindsay, it's okay. Don't worry about it. How you doing? Why don't you enter and sign, please?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you for having me back. So my name's Lindsay Horton. I am a spiritual advisor. I work at Gulf Breeze Energetics in Gulf Breeze, Florida. Basically, what I do is I help people who don't want to use medication face their life, face their trauma, and find healthy ways to get healing and find peace. By facing their life pretty much, and I try to help them realign their walk with life with their walk with their faith. So thanks for having me, and I'm excited about today.
Yeah, I am too, because part of the reason I wanted to get you here is I want to, at some point in the show, talk about immunity. And immunity not just on the physical level, but on the mental level and the coordination between them and how much, and if we can actually measure how valid or how effective somebody's immune system is. So we're getting into that. First, though, I just want to see if anybody has a news item that they've been wanting to talk about. First of all, I've got tons of stuff. So, but John, Jim, Ben. Oh, what's up, Jim? Are you now on the, are you back on the line? We haven't heard from you yet to introduce you. Jim, I think he's still busy. That's okay. So I have a large panel. When in doubt, we have other folks to go to. You don't have to listen to me the whole time. John, do you have a story?
I have a good suggestion for a topic. I got a topic.
What's that? Go ahead,
suggestion.
Ben. Yeah.
Well, you know, prayers are answered. You know, what could be the ultimate justice for Dr. Death Fauci? I think the ultimate justice would be if he died from COVID, and lo and behold, he's got COVID right now.
So you know, it's funny. I don't wish him any evil. I as much as I despise
actually,
this man,
I
personally
do.
Hate him. But I don't personally wish him any evil or any evil health. I'd have him for a long time so he can sit in solitary. That would be my choice.
I've been praying for him to die for about a year and a half now, so I'll keep praying for him to die. But
man,
some people think that's bad. But Billy Graham said it was okay to pray for good people to die. So if it's okay to pray for good people to die, it's also okay to pray for bad people to die.
Okay. As much as I never want to limit the conversation on the show, Ben goes right up to that line every time, which is kind of hysterical. Well, let's talk about Dr. Fascist. And for those that don't know, my title for him is Dr. Fascist, a genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. And I have no problem saying that because I can prove all of it. So that's what I call him. In fact, guys, we need to take more action. Does anybody know like a desk, you know, plaque maker? Because I'd love to put that on a desk plaque and send it to him. That would be fun. Or at least make a video of it. John.
Well,
John's
we do
video.
Have his address, so we probably should mail him some ivermectin or some, some of the meds that actually work.
You're on a really – this is exactly what I want to talk about. Ben, you must be psychic because I was doing a little reading on this morning. In fact, Judy and I have been texting back and forth a little bit. That's Dr. Judy Mikovits. I think he's taking hydroxychloroquine. I mean, I can pretty much guarantee it. In fact, Dr. Stella Emanuel of America's Frontline Doctors said, you know, give me a urine sample. I'll tell you exactly what he's taking. And so he's on some drug called Paxlovid. That sounded close enough to something I heard before called Plaquenil. Plaquenil is like the brand name for hydroxychloroquine. So
correct.
Any of you chemists, pharmacists,
drugs? Well, I'm certain he's on hydroxychloroquine because he told, I met with a man who was on President Trump's COVID-19 task force a couple of weeks ago, and lo and behold, Fauci told the entire task force he was taking hydroxychloroquine himself. Now, this was in February and March of 2020, but we know he was taking it then, so why wouldn't he take it now?
Well, he knows it works. That's
he's
why.
He's a liar.
He knows
it works, but
2005,
why?
He knew it works. Yeah, he's always known it works.
Yep.
That's why he banned it. he had to ban it. Because if he didn't ban it, then he'd never get his authorizations for his snake oil.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand how that works. You know, if there's one legitimate treatment for COVID, then there's no legally they could not have gotten the fake vaccines approved or the EUA for the fake vaccines.
Yeah, if you want to explain that just in a little detail, because we do have new listeners. We have new folks. Actually, Indonesia is now listening, and Zambia is checking in also. So our audience is growing. Go ahead.
You know, there's a rule that if there's one single approved, you know, if there's a valid treatment, there's even one valid treatment, then you cannot get emergency use authorization, which means all the COVID-19 vaccines would have never been given to a single person. So because they had to basically design bogus studies on hydroxychloroquine and on ivermectin to make them look bad because that would have killed the vaccine program. Which should have happened. But the problem now, of course, is we've already, given it to over 5 billion people. So that's why I call it the greatest mass poisoning in human history and why we're, the mass die-off is just starting because it's poison. The real science is in. The corrupt fake Fauci science says they're safe and effective, but the real science, they're not safe. They're poison. And they're only effective at killing people, causing clots, strokes, myocarditis, heart attacks, pulmonary emboli, DVTs, cancer, sterilizing people, and all these bad, horrible things. Yet insane people are in control of all the decision-making process. Like, for example, yesterday, the unanimous decision by the FDA to approve this poison for 6-month-old babies. All those people should be in prison and on trial as soon as possible, Nuremberg 2.0. This is nuts.
We're witnessing
the greatest mass poisoning ever, and that we can't get the poisoning to stop. And so there seems to be no end in sight other than everybody just has to die from the poison, and then eventually once all the brainwashed retards are all dead, then we can ban the poison. Apparently that's what it's going to take to happen.
Yeah, but they're leaving us rebels. Unless they lock us up in the gulag, you know, we're still here. You know, we're still healthy, vibrant, punchy, perky, and all those things.
You know, the World Economic Forum, they'll kill us by any means necessary. So they'll, you know, whether they can kill us by the fake vaccine poison or whether they use monkeypox and the monkeypox lockdowns or, oh, wait, we can't call it monkeypox. That's racist. What kind of, you know, the proof of the insanity is everywhere you look, you know.
But apex is too hard to say.
The word monkeypox is racist somehow. Well, apparently, you know, the World Health Organization, they're the you know, the PC commies, they're the most racist people on the planet. So they're the ones who equated monkeypox, the word monkeypox, with somehow it's racist, which is just nonsense. It's really
absurd. Oh, I know how they did it. You know how they did it, too. You know, anytime anybody refers to a black person, you know, with any connotation of monkey, that's immediately racist, which it is. But then they go to the I can't wait to be offended crowd, and they will reach anything, no matter how obscure or extreme, to make this racist point, because they know it works. So let's get Dr. Brian Artis to enter inside in, please. He is fashionably late, which is cool. Welcome, sir. Give us a couple of sentences on you. Brian, wake up. What about you guys? Do I have to ring the bell? Do I have to ring the gong again? Maybe I'll do this.
Yes.
No. Actually, here's the gentle reminder. Okay. that apparently is not working. So let's get the bigger one here. Where's my gong? One more time, folks. See, the problem is these are alphabetical. I have to find them. Now announcing the fashionably late Dr. Brian Artis. Nope, still nobody. Jim, are you on the line yet? Jim Thorpe?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. Why don't you introduce yourself? And then, and all of you, don't wait for me to call on you, please. If you want to leap in the conversation, it'll get messy, it'll get crazy, but at least I know who wants to talk, and I don't mind that. That's not a problem here. Jim, why don't you go tell us who you are
again?
Good
morning, Greg. Thank you for having me on,
you're welcome.
On your station, Action Radio. Incredible. You're doing an awesome service for awakening the blind. So I appreciate that. We need to do more of that. I concur with the great Dr. Ben Marble and his analysis of the poison jabs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Jim Thorpe. I'm a 69-year-old old guy. I'm board certified in obstetrics and gynecology and also board certified in maternal fetal medicine. I'm a very busy clinician, and I've always been a busy clinician my entire career, more than full time, having done high risk obstetrics for about 42 years. I've also extensively published in the major medical journals. I've reviewed for the major medical journals. I've served on the board of directors for the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine. I've actually served as an examiner for the, believe it or not, for the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology. I won't get asked back to do that, I'm sure. But having stated that, I spent a lot of time in my career focused on clinical research. I have about 180 publications or so in peer-reviewed publications for major medical journals and for proceedings of major clinical meetings, conferences. So I've been redirected all of my research efforts, like many of the other experts on this panel, over the last 2 to 3 years on the greatest disaster in the history of medicine, which we are currently in. The greatest purposeful hoodwinking and hijacking of the cartel to really push an agenda, a corporate agenda of profit and disaster capitalism over probably loss of at least 1 million lives in the United States of America if you combine the 500,000 deaths from the poison jab, and well more than that for the people that should have been saved by early treatment strategies. So I'll leave it at that. That's who I am and what I do, and that's my MO for being on this show, is to promote the poison.
Well, here, and this is what we deal in truth here, you know. And so, again, be bold, be brave, you know. Don't be afraid to hold back. But Dr. Fascist, in particular, you know, can you make public statements saying how come he's not on remdesivir and getting a ventilator? Can we make pronouncements like if he's taking hydroxychloroquine, he has to approve it? Is something we can do, or you can do, who have notice and followers than I do for now. I'll catch you up very soon. Don't worry, things are coming. Actually, because of you folks, the show is exploding. And it's really amazing what's happening. But is there some positive action that you all take? John, too, you know, John Cullen, is there something that can be published, videoed, or something to demand that he take the same treatments he's recommending for everybody else? Anybody got any ideas?
No, I'm not, John. I'm not certain. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Can you hear me all right?
I just announced your name so people know who's talking. You know, I try and do the voices
right.
If I know them. Yeah. Yours, I know.
So I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't necessarily. I mean, yeah. Certainly the irony of Dr. Fauci contracting SARS-CoV-2, the virus, you know, we all have our opinions about it. But you said something earlier in the show that I wanted to come back to, which is, what is it that we can do, you know, tactically, strategically, to stop this insanity? We just had the FDA approve the inoculations for children under 6 months to 5 years old.
That's insane.
Right.
That's irrational. No normal
right.
person
Dr.
would do
Thorpe,
that.
Let me just check. Let me check with Dr. Thorpe that that's correct. I think they just had the meeting yesterday or something. They voted 21-0. Am I wrong about that?
I think it's 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah, that was yesterday. Months. Yep, that you're correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So this just happened, and from my perspective, you know, Jim and I come at the same conclusion from completely different perspectives. He's got a career in healthcare, focusing on the female reproductive system, and I come at this from a data perspective. But we come to the same conclusion, which is that this is insane, right? And I come at it because I'm looking at the number of children that actually died in these different age groups. And these
you
are
some numbers on
that?
That
to me.
Can you reveal
oh,
some
sure.
numbers on that?
Yeah.
Do you have them handy? Yeah, I'd be curious. Yeah,
yeah,
feel free.
Yeah. So based on the latest download that I did from the CDC, and all these numbers are coming from the CDC's mortality system. They have a system called WONDER. And that's sort of the fundamental system for all the death certificate data. And they set up different systems to track the COVID deaths. And they actually started doing it in FluView, which was the system they were using to track influenza and pneumonia, PNI. So now you can go to these CDC websites and you can get the data and download it. And that's what I do. So as of the last download, I was looking at, for example, school-age children. So school-age children are 5 to 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So kindergarten through senior in high school. And then when they turn 18, they move into a different age category. But from 5 to 17.
Well, they're adults, too. That's a good place to break.
Well,
yeah.
Supposedly, yeah. I've got 3 offspring, and their adulthood is questionable. In fact, there's scientific stuff that says you don't develop an adult brain until you're 30. So we'll get into
really?
That later. Yeah.
No, that's
so
that's
we'll
a great point. I want to find out more about that. Okay. That's an
yeah.
excellent point.
Yeah. So
okay.
all these 20-somethings at Facebook and Twitter making decisions, it's a little unsettling. All right. The net of this is the CDC is reporting, as of last week, this past week's report, mm-hmm. that school-age children from 5 to 17, there's 644 of them that died with COVID in the United States.
With not
COVID.
From...
Correct.
Because this is a huge distinction. We talked about this for the last 2 years, that there's a lot of distinction in the world between dying with COVID, you know, from cancer, heart disease, you know, any number of leukemia, who knows what else, you know, to dying from COVID, where that's the main cause.
Right.
Do they break down the numbers on the with and the from?
They do. And they do that on their on the comorbidity page. So there's a comorbidity page, or actually it's a comorbidity tab on their COVID page. And what they tell you there distinctly, and I post this rather frequently on Twitter. So for those of you who don't follow me on Twitter, it's at @I_M_JohnCullen. And I post this rather regularly, which is the comorbidity data. And what the CDC says is that for 5% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only thing on the death certificate. So there's about 1 million something that have died so far, between 1 million and 1.1 million so far, that have died in the United States. And according to the CDC, 5% of that number had just COVID-19 on the death certificate. It goes on to say the rest of the people, so 95%, had on average 4 comorbidities.
So they would have died anyway. At some point,
not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
Not
all right.
So that's where we get into the age stratification. And that's why it's so important to understand, well, how big an issue were pediatric COVID-19 deaths? And this is where I don't understand what the FDA is looking at, because I'm looking at the CDC's data. 644 children died with COVID-19 since January of 2020, but more children that age drown just last year. So I then look at deaths from all causes for school-age kids. So 644 kids died from COVID. That's out of what, 1,200 kids, 1,000 kids that died, 2,000 kids, 4,000? How many kids that age died in the same time period? Just shy of 27,000. It's 26,953. Call it 27,000. So 27,000 kids of school age have died since January 2020. 644 died with COVID. And if we go with the averages that the CDC is telling us, 5% of the 644, give or take, had just COVID-19 on the death certificate. The remaining 95% of these kids had on average 4 comorbidities. Now, I don't know if that carries through to pediatrics, because they don't break it down at the CDC. They just give you this blanket statement about the comorbidities. But it's 5% died with just COVID-19 on the death certificate. 95% had on average 4 comorbidities. The number one comorbidity, influenza pneumonia, PNI. But when I look at 644 school-age kids that have died, and I said, well, but 654 drowned last year.
Right.
Choking,
now, car accidents, heat stroke from left in a vehicle.
Even more unsettling. All right, is birth to up to 5, not including 5. So this is birth to 4 and 4 plus. So this is the group that they just met about yesterday, the FDA.
Okay.
442 children from birth to 4 years old, 442 children have died with COVID. 54,579 children died with all causes. So this isn't even 1%. 54,579 children this age died from all causes. 442 died with COVID. So we're going to inoculate 60 million children? And is the thinking that if we had, we would have prevented these 442 deaths? If 54,579 children are dying in this age group, and only 442 of those were COVID deaths, maybe we have bigger problems like birth trauma. More children are dying in the delivery room than are dying from COVID.
I'd like to chime in and ask a question.
Please.
Here, because it's begging the question. So the question is, here's what's the all-cause mortality on average for 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, you know, before we started the poison program? Because if we only had, 400 children die and only 5% of them were actually from COVID, then if we know the all-cause mortality, say the all-cause mortality every year is around 40,000 children die, and only, you know, and suddenly that all caused mortality in 2021, 2022, if it doubles up to 80,000, then the difference is almost entirely going to be due from the poison, right? So I think if you know the answers to those numbers, we could probably guesstimate roughly how many people the poison's killing, because if, you know, 400 people even had COVID, you know, dying from COVID versus with the diagnosis, that's one thing. But if suddenly the all-cause mortality dramatically increased, which we know it has, I would just like to know the numbers, then we can guesstimate, has the shot killed more people than COVID itself? And we know the answer to that is yes, but I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Well, we'd have to look, yeah, we'd have to look at the VAERS reports on pediatric deaths, and I think the number was over 100. So if we had, and right, that's unverified, of course, so there's your disclaimer. But if there's over 100 pediatric deaths post-inoculation, and we're looking at 644 and 400 and something, you know, these are the numbers, school-age kids and children under five, and 100 children died, and we've got the myocarditis, then we've got all the reproductive issues that Dr. Thorpe's been talking about, you know, the spike proteins aggregating in the ovaries, not only of the adult woman, but of her, of, you know, her fetus, if it's female. And I don't know what we know yet about the spike proteins aggregating in the testes. You know, Dr. Thorpe has told us he specializes in, you know, the female system. We haven't talked about the testes a whole lot. I don't know, you know, if it aggregates in the ovaries, it possibly aggregates in the testes. And these are things that nobody really wants to dig into. And the question is, how big an issue is the COVID-19 pediatric emergency? So this is where we get back to, well, what can we do about this? Mm-hmm. When I look at individual states, so I look at states like New Jersey, I look at Colorado, I look at, here's Colorado. Colorado had 13,346 people die of COVID. 13,346 people died of COVID in Colorado. 20 of them were children.
Wow. Yeah, that's not much. And it makes sense, though. Everything I've heard about COVID
I just wanted to get back to that question.
Go ahead, Ben.
I was hoping to actually get an answer to my question. Maybe my question wasn't clear. The question is, what was the all-cause mortality in 2018, 2019? What's the all-cause mortality in 2021, 2022? I thought maybe you had those numbers there.
No, not yet. Not yet. Yeah. So but what I can tell you is there's sort of a second pandemic that's been going on that we haven't talked a whole lot about on the show, which is the number one comorbidity. Yeah, so the number one comorbidity, influenza, PNI. So in January, February, and March of 2020, before people started dying of COVID, 4,000 people a week were dying of PNI. What most people don't know, and this is something that Dr. Judy and I connected on about 2 years ago when we first met. I think it was October, almost 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Judy shared with me, well, she knew this backstory right after the 2009-2010 swine flu outbreak. The CDC came up with something called influenza burden. And influenza burden is a rather complex formula that they use. And when they tell you that 22,000 people died or 60,000 people died, that's influenza burden. And that is a complex formula that is documented that I read on my YouTube channel. And it takes me half an hour to read what it is. That's how complex it is. And it's got multiple authors. When I'm citing PNI deaths, I'm just going right to the system that counts death certificates, and I'm not factoring in hospital stays and hospital nights and hospital beds, and that's what influenza burden does. So these are different numbers. The number that the FDA or the CDC shares with the public is influenza burden. It's a complex formula, and on my YouTube channel, I read the CDC's document that describes what mm-hmm. is influenza burden, how do we calculate it. That's not what I'm citing. When I talk about PNI deaths, I'm counting death certificates. So
yeah, but that's the way to make it sound worse, though. I mean, this is what they did. This is why they went from deaths to cases. We've got 5 million cases.
Hang on, no. So what Dr. Judy explained to me is no. So in other words, now the CDC, when they tell you 22,000 people died in a certain season from influenza, that's not really what the death certificate count is. That's the influenza burden.
Oh.
Is 22,000 or 56,000.
That's like three hospitalizations equal a death or something? Or
correct.
Are they like a...
Divided by beds, divided by stay nights, divided by deaths, and they come up with this number. That's influenza burden. So I see a lot of people citing, well, 20 to 50, 60,000 people die a year from influenza. No, that's influenza burden. That's a calculated formulaic number. That's not how many people died. You have to go to FluView to get the count of death certificates, and that's what I do. I go to FluView, and I download the death certificate counts from influenza pneumonia, and the CDC and the FDA call that PNI. And what I started doing was tracking PNI before COVID, and the part that gives you the goosebumps is that 4,000 people a week were dying of PNI in January, February, and March of 2020. And this was unprecedented. This has never happened. There's never been 13 weeks in a row of 4,000 people a week dying of influenza. And I'm looking at 7 years.
They call it
COVID,
right?
John, can I chime in?
Is that Jim?
Please do.
Yeah.
Hey, John. So, you know, I think your point is so important. We've done this a lot in perinatal research and clinical studies as we've aggregated variables, you know, to give more statistical power, if you will, so that we make the events that we're analyzing to be a greater proportion. And then that allows a smaller sample size. But I think to your point that you and Judy have talked about before is that it's really, it's all a sham anyways, because not only are they manipulating the deaths from this burden, the flu burden, if you will, but it goes even deeper than that. They've influenced the deaths and the burden and manipulating for whatever virus they want, because we don't do viral cultures anymore. It was too expensive, and the labs could, and the hospitals and the powers that be could make a lot more money on laboratory that they can actually do much quicker. And that's not a viral culture. We used to do those, but they're gone now. So they can manipulate the PCR. They can manipulate the exact methodology and the cycles, you know, and they can manipulate the exact code that they're testing.
You just gave me goosebumps. Yeah. So Jim, I got to stop you because this is so huge. What you just said is so big. I don't think you know how big this is. You just told everybody that we stopped doing cultures. You have to stop there, and you've got to take a moment to think, Whoa. We stopped doing cultures. Did everybody stop doing cultures? How did that happen? Christian Anderson in Europe gets this whole cadre to go PCR. Now, PCR is not PCR is not approved. PCR requires an EUA. And yet we dropped cultures like a hot potato. Doesn't that strike you as a physician of 30-plus years? I mean, doesn't that strike you as odd?
I'm curious.
Why would we stop doing cultures?
I know the answer. To make more money and to propagate the pandemic,
no.
The Great Reset.
No.
The PCR gets false positive, and it artificially inflates the COVID numbers.
Yes.
That's why?
But why? Why do you stop doing cultures?
They want false positives so they can gin up their numbers and scare everybody for the fear porn.
All right. Let me tell you the answer because it's real simple. I just told it to you 3 minutes ago. 4,000 people a week were dying of influenza. And it wasn't getting better. It was getting worse. What happened in the summer of 2019 in Australia? In the summer of 2019 in Australia, 6 months before this outbreak in the United States, Australia had the worst influenza outbreak it has seen since the Spanish flu. One more time, in the summer of 2019, this is documented by the WHO, it's documented in news stories and whatever, Australia has the worst influenza outbreak it has ever seen since the Spanish flu of 1918. Now,
and
January...
they're panicking over COVID.
Well, no, not yet.
Not yet.
This is summer of 2019. Now
right,
you go
okay.
to January of 2020,
mm-hmm.
you're just hearing about COVID, but 4,000 people a week are dying in the United States of influenza, and it's on the news, by the way. In January, that's on the news, and you can see that on my YouTube channel. I kind of document all that. So you see all these news stories about this is the worst influenza season we've ever seen. That's in January. Going into February, then along comes COVID. If you have 4,000 people a week dying from a virus that anybody who cultured it would be able to say, oh, that came from Walter Reed. That's the Jeffrey Taubenberger strain.
So culture, then, it doesn't just tell you what the virus is. It tells you where it came from. It tells there are
right,
markers
get,
on it. Okay.
Yeah, so let's
now,
get
now
specific
this is getting
and do some math. Yeah,
okay.
So now we do math. So you've got H1N1, H3N5, H2N3, H7N2. Mm-hmm. There are 13 neuraminidase, I don't know how to say it properly, forgive me, doctors, but there's 13 N's and there's 11 H's, or there's 11 H's and 13 N's. That's the combination. There's 18 and 11. So it comes out to 198 combinations. Mm-hmm. It's 18 and 11. And so you have 198 possible influenza combos. But the PCR tests only have 5. So if you have a strain that's not in the PCR test, the PCR test will come back positive. So this is where Dr. Marble, Dr. Artis, spot on with you crank up the cycles to 45 times, and yeah, you'll find COVID in a piece of watermelon. It's going to be everywhere. It'll be in your rice pudding. So you crank it up, you'll find it everywhere if it's airborne. And that's what they did because comorbidity number one points back to Walter Reed. Comorbidity number one is influenza. What was the defining characteristic that we talked about with Dr. Judy a week or two ago? These cytokine storms. The cytokine storm in the 1918 pandemic flu was sort of the signature feature. Your lungs were turning to mush. Your lips turned blue. They called it the blue death back then. That's what they called it because of the oxygen deprivation, what was happening to the lungs.
Yeah.
So if you've got that virus killing people and you culture it, Dr. Judy looks at it and in 2 seconds goes, that's Taubenberger strain from Walter Reed. That's the 1918 reconstructed pandemic influenza. So when you do cultures, the place that does a culture is a BSL-3 lab. But H1N1 reconstructed pandemic influenza is a BSL-4 strain like Marburg and Ebola. It is the deadliest virus on Earth. And this is the virus that Dr. Fauci reconstructed with Jeffrey Taubenberger in 2004, 2005, and then published the genome publicly on Genbank. And that was a stipulation of Science Magazine. Science Magazine wasn't going to cover the story unless they published the genome on GenBank. So the Spanish flu, H1, and this is all, by the way, this is from Michael Warraby, who's considered kind of the leading expert on H1N1 Spanish flu from University of Arizona. So he's the one that I'm citing and quoting here.
So getting
pretty scary stuff.
It's very scary, but here's the thing, though. As we get to the theme that we're sort of going to develop here as the show goes on, of the Club of Rome and the elitists want to depopulate the world, if they really wanted to depopulate it, they wouldn't have given us COVID. They would have given us Spanish flu, you know, and recombined it and created a version that there was no immunity to, there was no drug to. Why would they then COVID? Isn't as deadly, which 99.9% of us, you know, don't need anything to, our normal immune systems will handle it. And then create a panic around something that's not that deadly instead of releasing. I mean, I'm glad they didn't, but I'm just saying, why didn't they release the more deadly version? Why did they promote
the
whole COVID thing?
All right. So, again, you go back to Australia in 2019. That was the initial outbreak of influenza.
That was
Comes to the United States. Then it comes to the United States in January, February, March. We see 4,000 people dying a week. The part I left out was after we have the COVID deaths, we still have 4,000 people a week dying of PNI every single week of 2020. That has never happened in history. And the number of PNI deaths in 2020 is staggering. 274,000 people die of PNI in 2020. That's never happened. So why do you release a virus in Wuhan? Because it has almost identical symptoms.
Okay.
And you can blame the Chinese rather than everybody saying, again, if you cultured these people, Dr. Thorpe just, you know, and I had to stop him because that's the modus operandi.
Glad you did.
The modus operandi is the PCR test, but not for the reasons people think it is.
Right.
Everybody thinks it's the PCR test because you crank up the cycles and you get these blown up COVID numbers. Yes,
That's why you're here, John, for the answer.
And you know, the PCR test doesn't detect anything that you don't put into the array.
Right.
So the only things it detects are the strains. So if you put H3N5 in one of the arrays and somebody tests and has H3N5, it'll tell them you're positive. But if you have H7N11, it comes back negative. And guess what iteration of influenza is not in any PCR test on the planet? Reconstructed pandemic 1918 H1N1 it's the only BSL4.
Yeah.
Right. It's the only BSL4 strain of influenza on the earth. So because it's the deadliest virus, because it's at the same level as Marburg and Ebola, and you have to wear a balloon suit to work with it, they don't give that to BioFire to put in the PCR test. They don't give it to Eplex to put in the test. It's not in there. They're testing for seasonal influenza, not reconstructed 1918 Spanish flu. That's how nobody detects it. The combination of, it's not in the PCR test, so the PCR, you know, neither is Ebola, by the way, right? So when you go take a respiratory array of a PCR test, if you had Ebola, it doesn't tell you that, right? It just says, no, you don't have anything. You're good, but you've got Ebola, but it's not on the PCR test. That's why Kerry Mulla said, this isn't how you diagnose people, folks. And yet Christian Anderson somehow gets the world to stop doing cultures. This is the PCR guy in Europe. And he's on a lot of the email threads with Dr. Dr. Fauci.
Okay.
And somehow they get this lemming effect where everybody just goes to PCR testing. PCR testing is not FDA approved. It required an EUA. So when we go back to, again, I want to go back to the beginning. You said, what do we do tactically, strategically?
Yep.
I look at Florida. How many five-year-old kids, you know, younger than five, 27 kids out of 70,000 deaths. I look at New Jersey. 32,000 people died in New Jersey. 20 of them were kids out of 32,000.
But if they're giving PCR tests, you don't know if they you don't know what they have. So this is why I've never taken a PCR
test.
Some of the COVID symptoms because I thought this is going
to
be
these are death certificates.
Okay.
Yeah, these are death certificates. So they don't do PCR tests on dead people.
Do they do cultures?
So possibly if it goes to, you know, now we're getting to doctor world, so you're going to go to Dr. Thorpe.
Well, we've got doctors here.
What is a medical examiner
now,
or a coroner? I don't know if a coroner or a medical examiner is going
to
do
in.
A culture, but I know they don't do PCR tests on dead people.
Okay. I hear a voice out there. We haven't heard from Brian yet.
Yeah. Oh, Jim Thorpe chiming in. Actually, you know, we can do PCR. John, help me understand. We do PCRs on postmortem tissues. We do them on postmortem fetuses and placentas.
Then I stand corrected. Then I stand corrected. But that has to be a new development in the last 2 or 3 years, right?
No, it's always been available. I can't. You're probably best at informing me as to the limitations. But you know, you could actually do a PCR on really old postmortem
tissue
material.
Okay.
Well,
then I stand corrected on the postmortem part. But what we do know is that there's like a respiratory array. There's different arrays that they make available. And in that array, there's a certain number of RSVs, there's a certain number of influenza viruses, there's a certain number of coronaviruses. And for example, on the BioFire respiratory panel, there's 22 pathogens. And of those 22, 5 of those are influenza strains, but they're specific strains. And they're all going to be seasonal. None of them are the pandemic BSL-4 strain.
Can't you
order
PCR tests?
That's how you avoid detecting it.
Can you get custom PCR tests saying, I want to test for this? You know, when I do a blood test to doctors, they say, I want this test, and this, okay? And so it's tailored to me. They don't test me for things that I'm never going to have, you know? And so that makes sense. But PCR tests, can't you get tailored PCR tests that'll test for the things you want? If a doctor, say, any of the folks here, Bent Marble, Jim Thorpe, Brian Artist, anybody that is doing any kind of testing, Lindsay and her health folks, anybody's doing any kind of testing, can't they get a PCR test to test for the things that they want to test for? Or is that part of the coup, the medical holocaust that we're dealing with here, that they specifically only want you to test for things that they only want you to test you for, so they can screw around with the numbers?
That's
a junk question, but it's an everybody question. You can't get tailored PCR tests?
No, not really. Not easily. And, you know, basically what most doctors, you know, all the fake Fauci doctors, they have to, anything they order has to be pre-approved by insurance. So insurance isn't going to pay for anything that doesn't follow the narrative. So
can you make a PCR test, or is that something that takes an incredible bio lab and lots of things to do? Can you make your own test? Well, that probably wouldn't be approved. I don't, I'm just speculating.
Not that I'm aware of. I think that you know, if you tried to design your own test, you would have to have millions of dollars and start from scratch with hire some lab to do it for you.
Yeah.
So in my world, what we try to do is we try to keep you in a state of being that you're healthy enough to avoid being susceptible to something, a strand, something like that, so potent. The hope is that if something would be going on in your life and you would be susceptible and you would contract that, that you would be able to beat it because your immunity would be at an all-time high as opposed to an all-time low. So we wouldn't so much focus on what strand or what version of anything that you had as opposed to let's control everything else about you to make this as easy on your body to beat as possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was just going to go to you, too, because I was curious, given the information that you've just heard, especially in your own healing, how has this changed anything or affected you?
Me personally, a lot of people in my world, we do non-traditional doctors. Mine is DeAndre Richard. And when I had COVID, he prescribed me ivermectin. I was able to get it at the East Hill Pharmacy. Now, I will admit this, not very many of his patients are willing to go with that sort of recommendation because of the fear tactic that's been put in our faces, but I was willing to try it. He did get my dosing wrong. The last time he had seen me, I weighed about 115 pounds when I got COVID because I have a couple autoimmune diseases. I was down to 90. So my dosage was wrong, and it ended up dehydrating me to the point that I needed IV care along because of the vomiting and everything else. But to be honest with you, the ivermectin helped me more than anything. I took it 20 minutes later. The only thing I didn't have was my smell and taste. So I believe in ivermectin. If one of my clients would come to me and they had a fear of it, I would tell them to just be careful of the dosage, do a lot of research on that, and have them understand the side effects and how extreme they can be to that, because even though it's a miracle drug, you still have to respect its power. So that's my opinion on it.
Yeah. What does ivermectin do exactly? I know how hydroxychloroquine works, but how does that ivermectin work? Who knows?
I answer that.
Okay.
So nobody really knows how it works.
It's true.
This is Dr. Artis. I can tell you what I know.
I believe that it works on a basis of energetics. So if you look at our three articles that we published last year for you or anybody on the panel or any of your listeners' audience, Google our Ether Trilogy Part 1, 2, and 3, and it talks about the whole body of human energetics. There's basically three energetics fields in the body. There's electric, there's magnetic, and then there's dielectric. So every cell is dependent upon the energy, and we don't give enough attention to this in medicine. And I believe that the idiopathophysiology of most diseases will end up being not due to a receptor deficiency or a defect at the cellular level or the codon level of the RNA or the codon level of the epigenetics and the DNA in the nucleus or in the mitochondria or any of the other molecular details. Yes, those occur in the body. They all occur. I'm not denying that. But they're passive, and they're directed by the energy flows in the body. So and I think that we prove that pretty unequivocally in those three papers by published materials. So it wasn't only until 100 years ago that the J.D. Rockefellers and all these people that came in and squashed the other physicians' specialties that they didn't like. They put them out of existence. They colluded with the AMA. And basically, they brought in disaster capitalism. And so they would only do a medical system, you know, starting at Johns Hopkins and other places, that would only follow the, quote, science that would put a lot of money in the pocket of the corporations and the governmental agencies. And that's what happened 100 years ago. For 6,000 years, Aristotle's theory of healing was all energy-based. And we only threw that out the window 100 years ago. And, of course, we threw it out the window and we promised everybody that, oh, look at now we have all this technology that we can look at chromosomes, we can look at electron microscopes, we can look at cell receptors. This whole pharmacology theory that brought trillions of dollars into the pockets of organizations, it was promised to cure disease. Has it done that in the last 100 years? Hello? Look at the
why do we still have
skyrocketing
cancer?
Prevalence.
Why do we still have cancer? Well, all the things we know, you'd think it'd be cured by now.
Right. It's an energy basis. So how does hydroxychloroquine work? Hydroxychloroquine works by increasing the dielectric capacity intracellular. It works by, you know, a cell cannot function unless there's a significant membrane potential between intracellular and extracellular, which is about 90 millivolts. So when every single heartbeat, okay, the heart is not a pump. It is a pump, but that's not its main action. The heart is the electrical generator of the entire body.
Do I have a lot of questions for you now? Okay, hang on. No, we're on to something.
How do I know
this? Very interesting. Yeah.
For sure that there's an energetic field in the body. How do I know this for sure? Well, it's proven. We've been doing EKGs for
what, for 70 years, 80 years, maybe longer.
Electrocardiograph.
And now we don't even need electrodes on our body. We can detect, we can telemetrically monitor the EKG. Every single beat of the heart, there's a massive amount of iron in the myocardium, and there's a massive amount of iron in the blood. When the heart contracts, it actually acts as a Faraday generator because it twists on its axis, and the blood is flowing opposite to the contraction of the ventricle, and it generates electricity, which is immediately distributed like an electrical wire through every single vessel in the body, and that gives energy. It's the same thing with light. Light gives energy through capture of ether, aether, A-E-T-H-E-R, so that every single photon that goes into your body, yes, it only goes in a millimeter, but all the extracellular fluid within a millimeter of your skin is infused with a massive amount of resonant energy from sunlight, especially if you have vitamin D. And so that extracellular energy that is immediately absorbed by the extracellular fluid and distributed to every cell of your body. The same thing for the Schumann residency of the magnetic field of the Earth. So, you know, God created us as a hierarchical body, the greatest creation God ever made, and ultimately all of the energy sources are hierarchical, and they ultimately come from our Creator.
I can absolutely attest to this, as I am a Reiki master, and I was also born with the gift of natural healing. So when I learned how to breathe for meditation and expansion of mind purposes, I learned that if I activate my pineal gland, that I can take a metal object and I stick
it
to my forehead.
What's a pineal gland?
So the pineal gland is very closely related to your zeal chakra, which is going to be at the base of your skull. That's your mouth of God. It has a science term as well. They probably know it. Anyways, that's where they say you hold your spirituality. So when your spirituality activated, it's going to work with your pineal gland. And your pineal gland is going to be basically behind your forehead, kind of in the center of your skull is where I understand. It's very tiny. It kind of looks like a pine cone. When you activate that through breathing, you do deep breathing. You start at your root, which is the base of your bottom, and you breathe up your spine through your forehead, and that activates it. When you do that and you get good at it, you can control the energy that it's putting off. Myself, I can take, like, let's say an earring, a bobby pin, a paperclip, and I can stick it to my forehead, and I can bend over, clean my house, walk around, and it sticks to my forehead.
Can I chime in?
Yeah, go for it.
Is this Ms. Horton?
Yes,
who's speaking? Oh,
Lindsay.
Hey, Ms. Horton. Lindsay, thank you so much. I just want to say, to your point, you know, we one year ago, my group published the definitive article on the magnetic, and we designed the largest clinical study that's ever been published in the medical literature. And we designed it specifically because of all the allegations from worldwide saying that the vaccine is causing the magnet to stick. Well, we bought a large number of neodymium standard magnets off and paper clips, non-magnetized, and we did the definitive study. We took a massive number of patients. Indeed, about 50% of human beings will have a neodymium magnet stick all over their body. And there was no zero correlation with the injection. That proves the underlying existence of exactly what I just spoke of. Our magnet study was published 1 year ago, and it is irrefutable. And nobody pays much attention to it, but it really proved exactly everything.
I'm going to do the rest of the show on this. This is fascinating. And I'll get Brian in here too, as soon as we can. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Lindsay.
So when you get good at this, which takes me, it probably took me about 3 months to really zone in and learn it, but you can take it to start off. You can look at the 7 main chakra systems, and you can actually take these objects, and when you control that energy output, I can make it stick in my solar plexus, my sacral, my root, my heart, my, well, the throat's kind of hard because of the shape of it. But still, I think that if you're having a hard time, let's say maybe you're having, I don't know, respiratory issues or something like that, I think there's something to be said about the fact that we can control and harness the energy within our own bodies, and we can localize it to a place that we might be having issues and kind of give it a charge. I don't know if it would heal a lot of things, but I just have questions about it because I'm just learning, and I have a panel of doctors right here on the phone. So do y'all have opinions about that?
I have an opinion. I believe that we've totally, I believe that the COVID pandemic is a gift from God to the healthcare system, because it's going to expose the incredible mass of false theories of treatment that our system has engendered over the last 100 years.
Anybody else? Let's get Brian. Brian Artis, we know you're out there. I'm going to get you to join a little panel here.
I am here, and I just want to confirm everything I've heard so far. I am a huge proponent as a chiropractor, nutritionist, acupuncturist, and the power of energy and energy medicine. Love Reiki. I've benefited from that from people who are Reiki masters that have been my patients, colleagues for years. I do want to answer a question that wasn't really answered, which was, how does ivermectin work? I can at least give you one. In April of 2020, the French researchers identified that the spike protein on SARS-CoV-2 had three genetic sequences most similar to king cobra venom, rabies viruses segments, and bungarotoxin, which is from crate venom. And they said that it's interesting, these actual venoms tie to nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. And in that study, they said there's an amazing benefit, it appears, for people who are smoking, and the possibility that nicotine's binding to those receptors that control smooth muscle contraction, like imagine your diaphragm. These venoms also actually cause hypoxia, the drop in oxygen. But they mention in their summary that around the world in April 2020, they said it's been very interesting that ivermectin has had such amazing results at stopping the replication. They say, quote, replication of SARS-CoV-2 and stopping the disease process of COVID-19. And they said what's interesting about ivermectin is it binds to alpha-7 nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. And that's possibly why it is so beneficial so fast. It actually crosses the blood-brain barrier, gets to the nicotinic acetylcholine receptors in your brain, and it improves the outcome. Anyway, that was one thing that I found was amazing and miraculous. I did not know that aspect of ivermectin until about 4 months ago, although I'm a huge proponent of it and have been using it for 10 years personally in my home with my kids. It's a phenomenal thing. Anyway, that was one of the things I learned.
You know what's interesting about it? What I learned from Dr. Zelenko, who I invite to the show regularly to join our panel. Hopefully he will someday. He talks about hydroxychloroquine as breaking down the protein wall of the virus, and the zinc as either destroying or preventing the replication of the genetic material. Sounds like ivermectin does both of those things, breaks down the protein wall and destroys the ability to replicate. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. Also, the zinc benefits of driving zinc into the cells of hydroxychloroquine, chloroquine, ivermectin, okay. All of that's a massive benefit also.
Huh.
Anyway, I love that stuff. You guys are doing a great job. I'm proud of you. I'm about to go into an appointment here, but just been listening.
Okay.
Keep it up.
Well, just let us know when you're back, and I won't call on you then until then, but thank you.
I will do it. Thank you. It'll be a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah, it's fascinating that people are actually carrying on, you know, regular practice and then dropping into the meeting, and then, you know, we're all kind of going back and forth. What I'm thinking about now as we're talking about this is, especially from Jim and Lindsay and Brian and Ben and John too on this as well, that what we really need is, you know, a new kind of medicine, which is really the old kind of medicine. You know, the things that this whole, you know, Rockefeller petroleum-based med school channel algorithm, plug in the thing that the Center for Medicaid funding insurance wants you to pay for, is the whole system is bad. And we really have to we have to isolate our healthcare. Like, I don't want traditional medicine anymore. You know, I mean, I got open heart surgery for a valve that wasn't functioning, and they tell me now I have no heart murmur, that everything's great, and the valve fits perfectly and wonderful. It's like they got the plumbing right, but then they almost killed me with blood thinners 3 weeks later. And so is there parts of medicine that we should take? How much of this do we need to convert over? And if we get a whole bunch of wellness stuff, that, you know, I want to explore this whole idea of energetics, you know, as we go through. Are we really talking about a new kind of medicine, which is the old kind of medicine, and basically divorcing ourselves
from it? The answer is yes.
Okay, go ahead, Ben.
We are talking about a new field of medicine, and this is something I'm looking at. I've been contacted by all sorts of people over the past 2 years, and the most exciting thing I've heard about as far as potential treatments for the vaccine injured is some hypothetical use of basically quantum physics technology, energy fields, to create holoforms. And I was contacted by some people out in Colorado that are working on this specific thing. It's kind of like the med beds where they use frequencies and vibration at certain frequencies to help heal things. But instead of using a med bed, it uses software in your computer and the computer generates a field. The charges vibrate. It stresses space, time. This creates a complex signature field, and that alters consciousness and the matter that's targeted, and that creates a feedback closed loop between the computer, the program, and the person using it. And the creator of this calls it holoforms. But basically, it's essentially a quantum physics concept. I'll read what he says about it himself.
Yeah, put it in English for me, too.
The holoform concept technology detection, scanning, playback, and synthesis methods, they're all proprietary trade secrets. But the point I'm getting at is I'm about to go to Colorado soon to beta test this. I'm one of like 30 beta testers in the world of this. And about to go in person to where they're doing this in Colorado. And
call us from there.
The idea being is
call us from
to,
there if it's Thursday.
Hopefully,
yeah.
The bottom line is it'll either work or it won't work. Theoretically, it should work though, and I think this is very exciting, groundbreaking. Could be a completely new field of medicine where you're using energy fields and resonant frequencies to heal any targeted tissue. It also can turn on DNA repair genes. Say for example, hypothetically, you could treat any health problem with this. So the potential is huge. Now we have to prove it actually works. That's the thing. Now, for example, I tested it on myself. I lost my smell and taste from COVID-19. So when I started testing this on myself a month or so ago, my smell was at a zero. Okay, on a 1 to 10 scale, I would say it was a zero, maybe a one on a good day. Now it's about a four. I did about 6 treatments with this computer generated holoform test software that they allowed me to use, and as of right now, I've had a dramatic improvement in my smell and taste. So to me, the proof's in the pudding. I thought, hey, it might work. Let's try it myself. And it seems to have worked on me. Now, I'm just one person with, one case study. But hopefully, if we can use this to repair the DNA damage in the people with the vaccine injury, because that would be a good thing, because there's 5 billion people that have been poisoned, right? So there's going to be a huge demand for some type of treatments for the vaccine injury. So I think this is real promising technology, and I'm looking forward to going to Colorado soon to see if I can find out more about it.
Well, like I say, if you can call us from there, if it's on one of our Thursday panels, please feel free. But here's something else I want to ask everybody too. Should we,
I want to try that after you say what you're about to say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. We'll get to everybody. This is what we do, a 3-hour show. But what I'm thinking is we need to start redefining medicine in terms of the human body, because we know about the endocrine system, the musculoskeletal system, the nervous system. What we really need to add is the electrical system. Make that a regular part of our dialogue. Because we are electric beings, I mean, should I see a doctor or should I see an electrical engineer when I have a problem? That facetiously, but when you think about it, there's a whole new branch of medicine that's not being talked about. If we're going to do our overall health.
I thought neurology was electrical. I thought the whole spinal cord.
That might be true. I could be wrong. Yeah, well, let's get to Lindsay after that.
You break your spine and you can't work because the electrical currents can't. I mean, I thought your whole neurology was based on electrical currents. And that's your heart beats. There's that little patch of neurons there that gets the electrical trigger and makes the heart flinch, right? I mean, it's all electrical. I thought that was like since high school.
We haven't been equalizing it.
I just wanted to chime in too. It's all about electricity. It's all about energy. It's all about magnetic field. It's all about the dielectric field. That's the basis of all human disease. If when you think about it, every single time, every single molecule that's transcribed and translated from DNA to RNA, every single protein needs energy to fold and to unwind. That's an energy-dependent process. We have billions of cells in our body. Every cell division takes a massive energy influx to unwind and wind back up the DNA. Where does that come from? That comes from energy in the extracellular fluid that's distributed throughout the entire body. The dielectric field within the nucleus, within the cell, is at least part of the mechanism of action of both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. If you look at Dr. Gerald Pollack's work, and he's from the University of Washington in Seattle, he's done some groundbreaking work in the field of energetics, and I would recommend his book, Water, the Fourth State of Water by Gerald Pollack. He's a PhD. He's brilliant. And basically what he says is that water isn't just water. Water is a massive memory field of energy. And when he puts magnetic or electrical energy into a glass of water, he describes it as two different zones. It's actually an energy sink. So you can store massive amounts of energy like I've been talking about with the extracellular fluid. Every beat of the heart energizes, puts energy into your body. So when we think about just the folding and unfolding of DNA, RNA, and proteins, it is a massive amount of energy requirement. And that's when you get sick with COVID. If you get sick, the first earliest symptom is what? You lose your energy. And it takes a long, and that's where you need to attack the disease early on with energetics. If you wait a week, it's the energetic therapy is really not going to work well. But going back to the fourth state of water, Gerald Pollack's work, you can take in the lab, and you can do this, read his book, it's incredible. You can charge it with energy, either photonic light or magnetic or electrical. And the water molecules realign themselves. So he talks about the exclusion zone is near the surface of the interface of the container, and it is charged very differently from the bulk water, which is in the center of the container. And if you put microelectrodes in the same vessel from the periphery of the water to the center of the water, the pHs are different, the charges are different, and there's an energy flow. That's energy. That's ether energy.
So that's why we're two-thirds water? I mean, water is a conductor of electricity. Water takes salt and breaks it into sodium and chloride. Water has amazingly powerful electrostatic forces. Right.
And energy water, energetics water, we've shown that, you know, you can put our resonant light system on a glass of water and it'll do the same thing. You can put, really ozone does the exact same thing through a different mechanism. It's ozone is all based on energetics. And the vast array of publications on ozone over the last 100 years in medicine is really quite phenomenal. It's the most potent preconditioning agent known to man. And it's made by the white blood cell, as is hydrogen peroxide.
The things I've never heard about. Lindsay, let's get you back in here. I know you had a comment.
I would like to say, I would like to hit on what we were talking about with the frequency, and then sure. I actually want to pull back into the water study. With the frequency, what he is referring to, we use that in my world as well. In Reiki, we offer what's called a sound bath, and we use singing bowls. That's an ancient Tibetan largely dominated Tibetan ceremony where you play the singing bowls and it's at a 528 hertz sound. Well, they say that the 528 hertz sound transforms your DNA. The problem with that is, as a energy worker, it's hard for us to sit down and calculate how much the person in front of us really needs to receive before it's going to actually raise anything. So do I need to sit there with my singing bowl for an hour and play this tone for that person for them to feel the full effect of this? Something like that. You were talking yesterday about oscillating and the 440s and the frequencies the different music notes give off. And that's mm-hmm. where I think this technology that Ben's talking about is going to be a key player in all of this. And it's how it's going to tie the non-traditional world into the medical world, because we're going to have to work together. And I think that what he's going to go experience is what the people in my world have been trying to figure out, is how can we possibly harness this to a point that where it can have its maximum benefit on an individual who needs it desperately. So I just wanted to say that. I think to go back, they say that a normal person's frequency stays between a 62 and a 78 megahertz. And they say after it drops below 57, you're susceptible to illness. Below 42, then you can, below 42, you're receptive to cancer. So I would say that a lot of the things people are doing, getting the jab, listening to this toxic stuff on the radio, on TV, the news, all of that, letting toxic people in their life, that probably all lowers our megahertz down to these levels to where they can easily make us susceptible to these viruses. And I think the jab just increased their chances of getting to us. Now, as far as the water study goes, I actually use Dr. Emoto's water study with my children clients, because I found that a lot of kids do a lot of negative self-talk. They have all these dreams and aspirations, but they try something and they're not as good as the person next to them. So they just don't have the confidence to keep going and understand they're just unique. So I followed Dr. Emoto's study with the rice and water. And basically what you do is you take three containers, glass jars, you put a little rice in the bottom of each one, and then you fill it to just over the rice in each one with just normal water. Every day you wake up, you tell one jar, I love you. You tell one jar, you're ugly. And then you leave the other jar alone. After 30 days of doing that straight, you notice that the I love you jar is going to be not in perfect condition, but the water is just going to be a little cloudy. The rice looks pretty much similar to the day you started. The your ugly jar is going to have fermentation, mold, darkness, blackness, just gunk. And then the one that you've left alone will be in between the two. So that teaches these children that we are 70% or more water. And what we say does have an effect on our overall health, our overall thinking, and how we perceive ourselves in society in general. So I think the water study is also cutting edge. And I think we're going to learn a lot in the days to come about how every word we speak in our mind and out loud has an effect on everything. So I think this is amazing.
Makes sense to me. You know, Lindsay, we talked yesterday about the cycle or full cycle, full circle medicine, excuse me. Hope I got the term right. That this is really where we have to go. And so it's not enough to be a doctor. You almost have to be, you know, the physical medicine, the mental medicine, the spiritual medicine. And I don't think anybody can know all of those things, but at least we can know the relationships and know where your specialty leaves off and somebody else's begins. So really you talk about, you know, you don't see a doctor, you see a team of people for whatever's going on. Does that make
yes,
sense?
Yes, you have to.
Let's get our doctors in here. We're thinking, oh, wait a minute. How do I do that? We'll get Brian back when we can. Ben, Jim, John. Let's get to John. I got a question for John, actually, as we talk about this. The question I wanted to ask you, it's sort of a little bit different but sort of similar. Immunity. Is there anything in the data that actually measures immunity, both mental and physical? You know, in other words, the stress, how much stress lowers immunity. Are there any quantifiable numbers that deal with immunity? Or the measurement of it?
There may be. I haven't looked at them. So that's okay. If I were to say no, that would be availability heuristic bias. And that would be, you know, just because I haven't seen them doesn't mean they don't exist. So I'm guessing there is data on that.
Okay.
That's not been my focus. You know, I've been focusing on these, especially with this announcement yesterday, you know, with the FDA, I've been focusing on the little kids. And why would they approve this inoculation for kids under five? And that's the thing I just that's been stuck in my craw, so to speak, for the last couple of days.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Why aren't you in a congressional hearing? Why aren't all of you in a congressional hearing? Where's the oversight? Where's any procedure? Why is it the FDA just gets to dictate and nobody questions them at all? There's no oversight.
Well, those of us who question them were silenced by the social media company. They were silenced by Twitter and YouTube.
Yeah, but that's
Facebook.
Not a legal procedure. You know, is there nothing?
No, I understand that.
Yeah, and this is kind of rhetorical. I'm not blaming you guys, but is there nothing in the judiciary, in the courts, in the oversight procedures of Congress? Are these people also so afraid to say anything? Are they also beholden to Big Pharma for the next campaign contribution? Are they so corrupt, so disgustingly,
following along? The answer is they're all captured by the global mass formation psychosis.
Okay.
Which basically means they're all brainwashed retards, to put it in simple terms, using words that we're not supposed to use. Retards have been brainwashed to be offended by words like retard.
All right. So basically, they're actually insanely dangerous. I mean, they're so stupid they're dangerous, but they all believe it. So what happened to doctors?
Correct.
Where do they lose their way?
It's a brainwashed retard pandemic, and that's what stupidity gets you killed. If you hang out with stupid people too much, you may wind up dead.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. We have all these dumb retards that are brainwashed in charge of all the decision-making processes. All the alphabet organizations are controlled by the PC Commie World Economic Forum propaganda, which I call, commonly known as political correctness, the most successful brainwashing tool of all time. And it's getting millions and millions of people killed right now.
Didn't that come from communism? Was that one of their basic strategies and techniques?
Correct. And they played the many decades game, whereas we play the 4-year game. They play the decades long game, and that's why they're kicking our butt right now, and we're losing. We're currently losing. Let's look at the big picture geopolitically.
Okay.
Over half the planet has been poisoned. Over 5 billion people have taken the poison. Okay, over 6 million deaths from the man-made Dr. Death Fauci's man-made virus that he paid to be created in the lab. Okay, so over 6 million people died, over 5 billion people poisoned, 6 million dead, over 1 million dead Americans. Number one death tolls in America. All those dead Americans could have been saved with early treatment. We're in a war. This is the war. The war is World Economic Forum versus humanity, and all the people, all the deaths have been on our side, basically, and we're not even fighting back. We're just all, talking about it and filing petitions and lawsuits and waiting for, expecting courts or votes to save us, and that's not how you win wars.
No, I'm going to talk about our legislation. I want to remind everybody about that.
Well, you did have Senator Johnson. You had Senator Johnson pulled in Pierre Corey. He had Dr. Richard Urso, he had Aaron Curiati.
I sent him our legislation. I sent him our bills on vaccine product liability.
I was there.
Right.
I testified at that hearing. I was there.
You were there.
Johnson's
That's
hearing,
right. That's right.
It was good. It was a great hearing. I'm glad it happened, but it was great. But all talk and no action to stop this war. We need to win the war, not lose it.
All right, but you were there, right? Senator Johnson pulls this thing together. You were there. All these other doctors were there. I think Harvey Risch was there from Yale, right?
I've invited him to the show, too. Yeah.
Dr. Risch was there. Dr. Weiss.
Yeah, he was in the hearing.
Peter McCullough.
Tom Renz was there. Tom Renz was in the hearing, the attorney. So the question then is, when then faced with these follow-up issues, right? So you're drafting legislation or straw man legislation, at least as a starting point, right? You're putting something on the table, and yet crickets. I post these statistics that I'm sharing with you guys. So when I tell you, 20 kids died in New Jersey out of 32,000 COVID deaths, and 20 of them were children. I post that to Phil Murphy, the governor, right? Mm-hmm. I share this information, and you get nothing back. And so when they are afraid to face the facts, the the CDC's data, right, the raw facts. Mm-hmm. Why don't we hear anybody acknowledging what I keep sharing about Beijing and Shanghai and China, right, and how few people appear to be dead in China, right? And how, mm-hmm. you know, you can compare Australia, Nigeria, you know, it's not just China, right? So Japan has fewer people dead than Ohio, right? How does that happen? Japan has 120 million people. So why won't anybody face
And they all take the jab
the
there,
music?
Too. They take
well,
the jab
why won't
in Japan.
They face the music? Well, there's 27 different vaccines in different countries. Like Cuba came up with their own. Kazakhstan came up with their own.
What?
So not everybody's using the brands that you're aware of. In different countries, they've come up with their own vaccines. Oh, yeah.
That's
and the
interesting.
Who publishes that? Yeah, the WHO publishes that.
Okay,
so Kazakhstan has their own. Cuba has their own.
I would say you're kind of hinting at something that you know, this is a mass eugenics program because the COVID-19 and the fake vaccines are genetically selective. They target certain populations. The number one target, Americans, as proven by Americans having the number one death toll. But they tend to spare Asians and Jewish people tend to be spared, whereas darker skinned people, Africans, and Americans are more likely to have bad outcomes. So it's a eugenics shot and disease. So they intentionally designed it to select for the people that they want to get rid of, is the point.
No, I mean, we're going to get into that. I'm going to take a break here in a couple of minutes, get you all a chance to, you know, get a drink, take a break for a minute, and then come back. And I've got stuff on the Club of Rome. I've got stuff on from Patrick Wood, Technocracy. It's just – it's fascinating because I want to make that connection between this and – you know, and the overall goals of these people. And what we have to become, you know, as well as philosophers and, you know, spiritualists and things like that, is economists. Because this is, as much as anything else, this is an economic problem. It's the World Economic Forum that was doing a lot of stuff with COVID.
The Dow is tanking today. It just went below 30,000. So
they said
it was over 33,000 a week ago. Mm-hmm. So it's dropped 3,000 points in a week. So the crash is in progress.
Well, yeah, and if you listen to – we have an economic reporter, Derek Park, on Fridays, and we've been talking about inflation since Brandon, you know, was installed in the White House because we knew it was coming. We knew it by the borrowing alone. We knew it by the borrowing and the printing. So we're up on most of these things that are happening from different people, and this is why it's so fascinating to put this all together. And I get to be an expert in everything. But there's still something missing, though. There's a connection that I'm not making yet. You know, we've got the Spanish flu. We've got COVID. We've got you know, they're pushing the vaccine, but that's far more deadly than the actual virus itself. There's too many things in the air. I'm like trying to juggle too many things in my head. It's like we everybody here provides pieces of the puzzle, and we don't have the whole picture yet. There are things that are missing from all the things that we're talking about here. So that's some of the stuff we need to talk about. Anyway, last comments for a bit, and then I want to take a little break here about halfway through today's panel. Anyone want to sum up anything?
I think I may have
an
approach. Go ahead. Yeah.
Hey, John, could you give me a call at your convenience?
I'll give you guys numbers.
Actually, we can exchange emails or something. But I had an idea, Greg. Again, you keep talking about from a legislative standpoint, what uh-huh. might we be able to do? When I look at these numbers for the pediatric cases, and again, I'm going to laser focus on these little kids,
mm-hmm.
the criteria for issuance of the EUA is based on there being a medical emergency, right? And so when we look at the definition of the EUA authorization and the grant, and I'm literally looking at it's U.S. Code 360 BBB, Section 3, Authorization for Medical Products for Use in Emergencies. That's the law. And so when you look at the law, mm-hmm. it tells you what the criteria for the issuance of authorization are. And if you've got 20 kids out of 32,000 deaths, and the pediatric deaths are 0.062%, 20 out of 32,000,
mm-hmm.
does that constitute a medical emergency if more kids in that state drown? Right. So if the fundamental assumption of the EUA is flawed and invalid, well, then what are we doing with the vaccines? If the How is there an emergency for pediatrics? I'm not talking about 85-year-olds. I'm not talking about 85-year-olds. I'm talking about 5-year-olds, right? 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds.
The numbers don't support it. I can sum it up in one sentence. You're expecting sane, rational decisions out of insane people, and you're not going to get that. Because they are insane. They're captured by the mass formation psychosis. They're ignoring all the laws. They're ignoring all the rules. And they're in charge, so nobody can hold them accountable.
Here's what I think. I think they're not being held accountable because nobody's citing the numbers that I'm citing. Nobody is saying, hey, you know what, in Colorado, there's only 20 kids dead. In New Jersey, there's also only 20 kids dead. Nobody's citing the fact about the need for the EUA in the first place. In other words, if the EUA is somehow nullified because there is no there's no pediatric emergency, there may be
I've had this discussion with probably 100 different doctors over the past year and a half since the fake vaccine program began, and everybody says that exact same thing. And we all tried to blow the whistle, and we all are trying to make our voices heard about the poison being poisonous, and nothing matters. Facts don't matter. Reality doesn't matter.
No, I disagree with you. I disagree.
They're going to continue.
Here's what I don't hear them saying. I don't hear them citing
the
law.
Until the people are marching in the street.
No, I don't hear the physicians.
They ignore the law.
But you have to cite the law in order for them to ignore it. So if doctors aren't aware that there's a law.
Look at Steve Kirsch's Substack. Steve Kirsch's Substack, he hammers this every week for probably a good year now. And the people just ignore everything we say. The politicians don't care because they think they may not get reelected. Basically all the politicians are corrupted by the mass formation psychosis. So we can't, we're under communist rule right now. We have communists in the White House. Control of Congress and the Supreme Court. And they don't care about the laws. They don't care about the people. They just want to kill as many of us as they can. That's what they're doing. And nobody's stepping up to stop it. The only people that can stop this are soldiers.
Well, we begin.
That's what I disagree.
I think we have to look at what is the tactics, what are the strategies that we can use using their own flawed approach. In other words, if they declared an EUA, a pediatric EUA, and there's no data to support it, can't we get that nullified? Is there a mechanism for that through legislation?
It's Jim Thorpe piping in again. I will just say an amen to everything Dr. Marvel said. I think he's right, John. In my opinion, he's right on the assessment that there's complete lawlessness. You know, Obama implemented complete lawlessness into this country at the beginning of his empire, and he's continuing to reign. So there's complete abandonment and disregard for laws. And we've seen that repeatedly over the last, 14 years of lawlessness. It's unbelievable. It's none of the elected officials that are making these laws. It's appointed officials. Everybody is corrupt. And, John, you spout off facts that are absolutely incredible that any logical person would come to the exact same conclusion. And the problem is nobody is listening to your platform or my platform or Ben's platform or Greg's platform. Nobody's listening. They don't care. They censor.
Still there? Where'd you go?
Yeah.
Okay. Someone got cut off.
Yes, they just censor
Jim
us. They censor off. Us every time.
Oh.
This is why I'm the most banned doctor in America. I've had 12 Twitter accounts banned. I've been in Facebook jail for 7 years now. I got banned off LinkedIn. I've been banned from Instagram. I've been banned from MedPage Today. They just constantly
ban
you everywhere.
You've got
you
us.
Tell the, you tell the truth.
Yeah.
You tell the truth anywhere, they ban you. Hey, question, Greg, what's the audience? Are we Florida only or is this nationwide?
This is worldwide. Worldwide.
Oh, wow.
I'll pull up the map sometime. We've been heard in over 70 countries. Most of it's the United States, but I will tell you, the audience in Australia and Canada is growing rapidly. And so we've also got other big countries, England, France, Germany, various places. We just picked up Indonesia for a small audience. I don't know how many. But this is heard worldwide. And so anybody, so the more people share it worldwide, the more you folks share this show, they're also going to learn about the other shows that we have. Like when I had Lindsay on yesterday talking about all kinds of fascinating things. We've got, you know, we have Mama B on Mondays, and the local folks may know her. But she's very well connected to the Republican Party, Black Republican leadership, and knows some amazing people, and is going to help us with some guests here too. So as we are working our way up the sort of chain of public officials, some incredible things, I can't give you all the details yet, but some incredible things are going to be happening here. So this audience is going to grow. But the best way is for us to continue the panels we're doing, continue talking the way we do, because we haven't shown up in their radar yet. So it's not huge. I'll tell you right now, the more you share it with your folks, the better it's going to be. But because we're not huge, we can say the things that we're saying right now. We're openly advocating a new kind of medicine. We're openly saying, I say Dr. Fascist every day. You know, if that run national news, I'd have people storming my house, you know, in the middle of the night. You know, but not yet. But this is the kind of thing that we're working on. The legislation that we have, and this is what I want to talk about too, especially with, you know, with getting some kind of hearings and things the effect that we can have with this. And I just sent John the bill that Dr. Zelenko and I wrote on emergency use authorization reform. We wrote that back in August of 2020. Okay. That's something that Senator Johnson needs to see. So Ben Marble, if you're talking to him next time, because you were on the panel with him, you know, and Harvey Risch, I've been in communications with for a couple of years. I sent him the bill, you know, and Dr. Zelenko obviously sent it out. He wrote it, you know, with me. He gave me all the information. I just, you know, put it in bill form. So the problem with our citizen legislation is it hasn't been really tried. So people go, well, that's not going to work. Well, it does work. You just don't know how to use it yet. And the way you use it, we don't start with the legislators. We start with the public. You start with the public. You get the information out there. So you should be sharing, ideally, our bills daily. Talk about our bills. In the course of your reports and your TV shows and all the things that you do, say, hey, we're having a great time. We're going to talk to this guest. Da, da, da. By the way, have you shared, you know, product liability on vaccine manufacturers? Have you shared the cure for censorship, the Section 230 reform? It's only five lines. It's not a big deal. Have you shared, you know, Dr. Zelenko's reform of emergency use authorizations? Have you shared our bill, our constitutional amendment to ban Congress from borrowing money? And that's one of my latest ones. There's a lot of things that we do here that aren't necessarily medically related, but do tie in. You know, you cut the government off from borrowing money, they're not going to have enough money for all the health Nazi stuff that they're doing right now, okay? So there's a lot of like synergistic effects, and this is why I love having people from different areas. We've got John, who's a data expert. We've got all you different doctors from different areas. We've got Lindsay, you know, who works with spiritual health and all kinds of different things that I'm learning about from her, you know? And so you start tying these things together. Everybody has pieces of the puzzle. And this is when we start putting them all together, we get this enormous picture. But the one piece that is not being emphasized as much as I wish it were is citizen legislation. And that means going back to Senator Johnson. You know, I'll go visit him. I'm trying to get lobbyists. I was hoping to get Hillsdale College students to be lobbyists for us in Washington. So they're taking our bills directly to senators and representatives on a daily basis and saying, what are you doing about this? We got the best ideas in the world right here. You know, and as we share them with different countries, they're picking up on it too. I wrote a Bill of Rights for Australia. It's a 30-point Bill of Rights. Some of which we could use in our country, you know, full medical freedom, full informed consent, full body autonomy, mind and body autonomy. I'll send it out to you guys. I mean, this is pretty incredible stuff that we're doing here. We are on the cutting edge. But the cutting edge of citizen legislation, because it's so new and because it has been tried, you don't think about it every day, but I wish you would. Who wanted to say something?
Greg, you know, I really appreciate your comments and your pushing the citizen legislation. You know, citizen legislated myself for 2 years, written every Congress person, every political person that I know of that is my representative. And I've showed them all the data like I did with the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the Federation of State Medical Board. They don't care. They don't care. They never return my calls.
Well, no, you make them care.
They don't
care. You share with people. You know, you share with media, with Steve Bannon needs to have us on, Joe Rogan needs to have us on, you know, in a panel, you know, these different, we need to have press conferences. You got to go to media, you know, Gorka should have every one of you individually talk and then mention citizen legislation. It should be a regular part of your interview process. Anytime you're talking to anybody, any panel discussion that you're on, anytime you're interviewed, anytime you do a TV show like Brian does, anytime anything happens, you should hopefully spend a minute on citizen legislation. Here's the website. Have you sponsored, have you shared, you know, vaccine product liability? have you shared the cure for censorship with a few lines correction to Section 230? You know, have you shared X? Pick a bill that you like. You know, write your own. So, Jim, if you go to these people in Congress, and you can have all the data in the world, and they just all get all glazy-eyed and they don't care. But if you say, here's a bill, and if you don't support this, you know, I'm going to tell everybody you didn't support this. You know, I mean, you don't want to threaten, Ben, but you want to you want to persuade, coerce, and then say, look, I represent, you know, the various groups that we work with, Citizens for Medical Freedom. There's a bunch of other folks. In fact, I want to do a lawyer show next week. I'm trying to get Larry Klayman. I'm trying to get Jonathan Mosley, our legal reporter. I want to get Jeff Childers, who the local folks around here know. He's the one that got the mask mandate overturned in Gainesville. Okay, so the legal aspect, and the one thing Jeff told me, he told me this after the first rally, he says, give us the laws that allow us to take them to court, to take these people to court. So our job, my job as a citizen legislator, is to get the laws out there in the public debate, in the media, and into Congress, the state legislatures, the local governments, so that lawyers like Jeff Childers can go, okay, great, vaccine product liability, I'm not going to sue their asses off. You know, Section 230 is corrected, so the big tech has lost their power to regulate the internet or even touch it. And if they break that, then another lawyer can come along and say, well, I'm going to sue their asses off. Ashley Moody, the Attorney General of Florida, would love this if I could get to her and talk about it. That's in the works. I know people who know people now. You know, as we are climbing the chain, these things are going to happen. But I need your help to get out there. And every time you talk to anybody, just mention the bill. Say, hey, look, we got a bill here. This will fix product liability on vaccines. There won't be any mandates. If they're liable for what they produce, those mandates are going to disappear. Oh, I can support that. So related to something that people can support, that's the basis of persuasion, the basis of how citizen-led, that's what lobbyists do. But they have money. They say, we will support you. Big Pharma says, we will fund your campaign if you don't have product liability. Okay, and we come along and say, wow, we got a million votes that says differently. You know,
hey,
we got a million votes in your district.
Why don't we do a
citizen,
could we do a, Greg, I'm going to jump and ask a question.
No, go ahead.
Could we do a citizen legislation to brand World Economic Forum as the number one terrorist organization in the world?
You
could. How about that?
Yeah, you can do that, sure. But what I would do is I think we need to reinforce the idea that none of these things have any effect on us as Americans, because the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So if you want to do an international treaty constitutional supremacy bill, something like that, not just the World Economic Forum, but the UN, but every international body, the Paris Climate Change Accords, anything that the WHO does, you know, anything they do. So if you want to get something even more general and more broad to say that a redeclaration that Americans are not subject, and this is in my Australian Bill of Rights too, are not subject to any international agreement, regardless of what the federal government does. Because we're citizens,
Greg,
we're sovereign citizens.
Know,
go ahead.
Greg,
Jim?
You know, that sounds really good, but the fact of the matter is that nobody cares about the Constitution. The Constitution has been ignored for the last 20 years.
I disagree.
It's futile.
There's a million people in Washington January 6th.
This is where I agree with Jim. We've been doing this exercise in futility for 2 years now, and nothing seems to matter. And this is why I say, certainly, yes, we should try our petitions. We should try our citizen legislation. We should try voting for the right people, and we should try working, you know, all those things that we can. But I think ultimately, whether or not we win or lose this war depends on soldiers actually starting to win and doing their job and doing what soldiers need to do, which is to target the actual enemy, which is World Economic Forum, World Health Organization, the PC commies in charge, the globalists, the transhumanist globalists that want to destroy America and bring in their one world government. That's the big picture here. They're trying to take down our country, and they're winning, and America is about to be game over. And that's what most people don't seem to get. If they cut the power grid, which all signs indicate they will cut the power grid, probably there's probably 60 to 70% chance it gets cut before the end of the year. And when that happens, a month later, civil war ensues. And then they can leave the power off for as long as they want. And then eventually they have to send in the UN peacekeepers to mop up the mess. And then it's game over. The one world government's installed and America's done.
Yeah, but you're missing a point, and that's the fact that it's too hard to organize all that. It's too hard to organize the power grid. There's going to be so many, you know, the politicians go, wait a minute, you know, we're never going to vote. People aren't going to support us. Watch the price of gas. You want to know what's going to happen? I've never been a doomsday, you know, scenario person, although I'd get caught up a little bit in Y2K, but that's another story. But every time I hear these doomsday things from you know, Leonard Nimoy did the video that we're all going to die in a nuclear winter. You know, all these things that happen. The one thing is that it's hard to organize these things. You know, and if you look at, you study accidents, okay? Why does an airliner crash? Well, because seven things happened that made it crash. There were seven bad decisions. There's a chain of events. So the things you're talking about require a huge chain of events. And quite frankly, the globalists aren't that good because nobody is.
Well, you're ignoring the fact that they've already poisoned over half the planet. So they actually did. They succeeded.
No, people willingly
won,
did that, though.
They poisoned half the world.
Yeah, but they only did that
because
people
took a lot of
coordination,
a lot of effort, a lot of bribes.
Yes,
they bribed everybody they could bribe, and they did it. They succeeded. They won the mass poisoning. Their kill shot program is already done. So they can throw Fauci under the bus now and wrap that up, and then they can claim, well, we thought it was safe, effective. Fauci told us it was, so we thought it was safe and effective, too. We didn't know.
Plausible deniability? Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm a little more optimistic.
Succeeded, and people are in denial about that obvious fact.
Yeah. But this is where you get, I think Brian was the one that talked about glutathione and some of the other things. You know, what we really need to start publishing everywhere is vaccine injury recovery procedures. You know, and that's something to talk about every time, too. You know, and this is where I want to get Dr. Simone Golden here. And I think a few of you are in contact with her. We need America's frontline doctors to start publishing citizen legislation and to start talking about cures and vaccine recovery.
Certainly, so we treat vaccine injured people. MyFreeDoctor.com treats vaccine-injured patients every day, so yes, we should mention that.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear the procedure.
People do have hope. People have some hope because there are good treatments. The simplest treatments, you know, everybody that has a vaccine injury should be taking ivermectin. The science we're seeing is that it does help these patients. Mm-hmm.
If you can put something on something that I can publish,
that
I can put in my
groups on several other
drugs
that help. Yeah. Nigella sativa, shikimic acid, N-acetylcysteine.
Is there a way to help with shedding?
Go ahead, Lindsay.
Shedding? Well, that's the thing. Ultimately, the true cure, and that's what we're searching for, and I think this holoform quantum physics stuff that I was talking about earlier has the biggest potential, because if we have to be able to turn off the production of the spike protein, and that's the true antidote, the true cure is shutting off the spike protein production, because it appears that you make spike protein for the rest of your life if you took the poison. So we have to turn that off. We have to turn that genetic switch off. So finding a way to do that is how we find the cure, and I believe that the most promising thing to do that is going to be this holoform resonant frequency quantum physics stuff that I was talking about earlier. I think it has tremendous potential, and I'm hoping it will be the cure because there's 5 billion people that are going to need it.
Yeah. You know,
I just wanted to interject something. So, you know, Dr. Marble with myfreedoctor.com, seen over 250,000 patients, the only doctor in the country that has seen that many in all 50 states, all for free, 99.99% cure rate. So we know that. Also, frontline FLCCC asked me to come on board as their obstetrical maternal fetal medicine consultant and with all their protocols. So we are now, and we had a lot of meeting this week. So FLCCC is coming out with a brand new.
What's that stand for?
Post vaccination. FLCCC. Somebody help me! But they're coming out with
Frontline Critical Care Consortium. They're all.
Is that frontline doctors? Is that from
no,
my doctors?
No, that's Pierre Corey, and that's Dr. Pierre Corey and Dr. Paul Merrick and that whole group.
Yes.
But they're coming out. They have some incredible protocols, and they have one for vaccine injury. And so watch their website. I've looked at it, and
what is the website?
I can't share that because I've signed a non-disclosure.
Guys. All right, here's what we need, though. If you can just give me message me, Facebook, email me, greg@writeyourlaws.com. I can make PSAs on these things.
.com.
What's that now? Say it again.
It's COVID-19criticalcare.com. Or you could just get on DuckDuckGo and search for FLCCC. Their website's pretty easy to find. They've got a lot of good
protocols. And I'll get a vaccine injury.
Great work.
Yeah, because I have people asking me all the time, especially when Brian Artis was talking about the glutathione, things that he recommended, selenium, stuff like that. I need to be able to post something, and then I can turn it into a PSA, and then it plays every day, you know. And so I can do things like that. Anyway,
Certainly, the intermittent and fasting is a big part of the vaccine-injured treatment that does help.
Why does that work?
Reboot your immune system.
Really?
It's kind of. I can read you there a little blurb on it. It says fasting has a profound effect on promoting immune system homeostasis, partly by stimulating the removal of damaged cells and mitochondria and clearing misfolded and foreign proteins. Intermittent fasting likely has an important role in promoting the breakdown and elimination of the spike protein. Fasting is contraindicated in patients under 18 and impairs growth and during pregnancy and breastfeeding. Patients with diabetes as well as those with serious underlying medical conditions should consult their primary care provider prior to fasting as changes and their medications may be required. These patients require close monitoring. So intermittent fasting is one tool. Ivermectin, another good tool. Low-dose naltrexone, melatonin, aspirin, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin K2. Those are the main ones. And there's a few others. So there are.
I'll email you.
Point being, what those do is those help to remove the spike protein. They help to reduce the spike protein levels in your system. But the problem is if your body keeps making it, so we're just treating the symptoms. With these medicines, but it's certainly better than doing nothing.
Where's your body making them?
Every cell that the fake vaccine goes to and penetrates through, it turns on the genetic machinery to start pumping out. You become a spike protein poison factory when you take the poison.
So you
and that's
keep
what
self.
Most people don't get.
So, all right, let's talk about that because that's really important. I keep wanting to take a break, but we're having too much information come out here. So the genetic modification, the messenger RNA that's in the snake oil jab goes into your system, and then it teaches every cell. It overrides the normal immune things that would have killed the minute it hit your body. And then it teaches every cell to make spike proteins. It's like a virus. It's a virus itself then.
Correct.
Explain.
It has a pseudouridine in the shot, so it's not true mRNA. It's actually false urine. It's fake mRNA because it has this pseudo means false. Pseudouridine was put in there. Why? Because the pseudouridine, it helps it to evade your immune system, so your body doesn't clear it out, and that's why it stays in your system for so long. They did that on purpose. That was an intentional addition to the shots, the pseudouridine, which makes it far more dangerous and far more deadly to the patients. So this is all proof that these were designed to kill people, not to help people. But ultimately, we have to figure out a way to turn off the spike protein production because that's what, spike protein is what causes all the symptoms of COVID and it's what puts you in the grave. Hopefully we can find that.
That's amazing.
In the meantime,
yeah.
These drugs help to remove what's circulating, and so they do help, and that's what, people that are vaccine-injured should be doing, the intermittent fasting, the ivermectin, the low-dose naltrexone, melatonin, aspirin, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin K2, et cetera. Because if you don't, what does the spike protein cause? It causes cancers. It causes clots to randomly form all over your body, in your lungs, pulmonary embolus, in your legs, DVTs, in your brain, it's a stroke, in your heart, it's a heart attack. So it's just poison, and we can. Yeah. The doctors, we always argue and debate about what kind of poison it is. What kind of poison doesn't really matter. Just think of it like cyanide or arsenic, and just the common sense that no human should take cyanide or arsenic, or any of the COVID-19 fake vaccine gene editing poisons. We need to get them banned as soon as possible. This is the maddening thing about it. It's like a year and a half long episode of Twilight Zone. We've been shouting from the rooftops, this is poison. I mean, there's a group of doctors that I put together. I call it the Right Docs of History, the doctors that never recommended a single dose of the poison, the doctors that didn't take the poison themselves, and they didn't recommend it for a single patient. And we've got, probably 30 doctors in that group. We have some press people in the group as well, but there aren't that many of us, is the point. But these are the doctors that the people need to hear from because we're the doctors that got it right from the start, from day one.
Bring them on the show.
You can't be on the right side of history unless you're actually right. Well, Dr. Yeah. Thorpe is one of those doctors, and Dr. Artis is one of those doctors.
Oh, no, that's what they're
here.
But what I'm saying is we get these more voices, and then you have a podcast that you can share, and you have the voices of all of you, talking to all the different audiences that you all have individually.
You know what? I need to add you to the group, Greg, and then you can talk to the other doctors, and you can pick and choose who you want on. That's fine.
I want to make them citizen legislators. I want you all advocating these bills can do it. I know you're busy,
I'll get you added to the group.
Cool. That'd be great. All right. I take a quick break now just to give everybody a chance to kind of go, And when I come back, I've got a question for John Cullen. The data stuff, is there a way that we can statistically figure of all the people that they say are dying of unknown causes, if there's a way to figure how many of those might be COVID shots? And the reason I'm thinking of that is I got an article from Emerald Robinson on graphene oxide, and she's talking about Justin Bieber. You know, she says, well, you think this just happened naturally at a 20-year-old, got a face paralysis? We don't think so. And so if there's a way to analyze that, I want to find out. All right, so I'm going to mute all of you for about 5-6 minutes. Take your time, rest, recoup, and then let's come back for the last hour. And I want to talk about the really big conspiracies, not the theories, but the real ones, the Club of Rome, the World Economic Forum. You know, who are these people? I'm going to talk to Lindsay about that because I want to find out psychologically, how does somebody go from being a billionaire to a self-appointed god? Why do they think they can do this? And there's got to be some kind of mental process that goes on with that and the development that creates these monsters and why they're not created in different groups. We got the Gates and the Klaus Schwabs and the things like that. Anyway, meet you all. Take a break for a few minutes. And two big questions when we come back. And that should be very interesting. So I'm just muting you all now. I'm going to play something and away we go. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. That's W-Y-L. W-Y-L comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Well, that should inspire you.
If it doesn't, I don't know what else to do.
All right, so let me make everybody's line live. We'll play this next little piece for about 17 seconds, and we'll be back live with everybody.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
See what happens when you let me loose with a production program, a little software. I have way too much fun here. All right. So the one thing I learned, I did some research for the show, and what I found was that the globalists, it's far worse than I could have ever possibly imagined. They're talking as much as, I think you mentioned this last time, 90% of the population of the world they'd happily do away with. So I want to start with Lindsay in this because this kind of fascinates me. What kind of person would do this? What does it take, you know, the complete loss of spirituality, the loss of God, the loss of everything, you know, we consider decent to allow people to do something this bad, to think that just because they're billionaires that they can dictate, you know, the way the world should be? How does this even work? You know, and you may not be an expert on this, but, you know, give it a shot. Sort of speculate and let me know what you're thinking as it turns to people you've seen, studies you've done, you know, how mental and spiritual things work. You know, how do people go from human beings to monsters?
I think it can all really stem back to the biggest scene of spiritual warfare that I think any of us alive today have ever seen was when COVID hit. And while there was a lot of death and a lot of bad things that happened with COVID, if you want to take one of the positive perspectives on it, it was confirmation that God is real, God is alive, and that he's watching. If you saw him, he immediately shut everything down. And a lot of people didn't get it, which shook me. I was very concerned by that. I mean, he took us and he said, you want to worship these athletes? I'll shut down the stadiums. You want to worship these pop stars? I'll shut down these concerts. You want to do this? I'll shut it down. And nobody took that sign seriously, that warning, and that concerns me. There's a clear divide in Hollywood and in the upper elites of people who want to fight for the better good. They are out there. They do exist. This panel is proof of that. But unfortunately, the ones who have the more money and the more say-so, they're the evil ones. Just like in the physical world, there's good and evil in the supernatural world as well, in the spiritual world. So these people, these elites, have ultimately come together. They found these ways of harnessing and controlling, you know, our minds and the frequencies that surround us and everything. And they know that, you know, they know the ability they have. There's more soldiers out there in their minds than just the ones with boots and uniforms on. I mean, those of the population that haven't been woke up, they're essentially soldiers for them. I mean, they do the dirty work. They cause the chaos. And if you read The Limits to Growth, which I'm sure a lot of people have, you see that they say even if they try to overtake us, depopulate the planet through, let's say, a food shortage, there is land available for people to resource and to plant and to gain goods. But ultimately what will happen is the social aspect will be the demise of the population. Is even if they feed us, we will end up basically destroying ourselves through social conflict and social norms and differences and stuff like that. I found that fascinating, that even if they provide us with natural resources, they assume that one day we'll just destroy ourselves through this mind control, this divide. So can we start there?
Yeah, no, go ahead. I'm just thinking. Yeah, feel free. Continue. And then we'll go through the panel, John, Ben, and Brian. And I want to hear from Brian. We haven't heard from him for a bit, unless he still has an appointment. Jim has left us. He probably had something that came up in his practice. So we just have the four of you right now, plus me.
I think I think they want to do it slow. I think they've already started to depopulate the Earth. I don't think that's radical to say whatsoever. I think they do it through sneaky ways like the jab and different vaccines. I think they use this as experiments. And if we don't make it through, then, oh, well, that's one less to have to deal with later. I think we are a threat, those of us that are woke and those of us who do understand what's going on. So we do have to be careful, especially at this point in time. But overall, I think since they give in to that want for greed, well, in the end, I don't want to be one that's susceptible to what the evil is doing. I want to know what's going on and be controlling and have control and be there in the end. So I'm going to do it. And I think those of us on this side kind of see it as, well, good's going to prevail in the end, and I know I'm going to already be there, so I'll withstand whatever persecution we have to right now because we know that good will override bad in the end. And I don't know. I feel bad for them. They know ultimately what's going to happen, so I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that one of the things that's common to, I think, everybody on this panel is a very strong belief in God, that we are not the highest power. And I think the complete absence of God in those that seek to rule others. Because if you have God, you don't seek to rule anybody else. It's enough that, you know, you already know the intelligent designer of all this stuff, and there are things you don't have to worry about. However, you know, if there is no God, and then you think, oh, gee, maybe I should be the God. Maybe I should take the responsibility. Maybe I have to direct other people. And this obsession with control, I don't see that in people that have God in their lives. I don't see that. It's not the same kind of thing. The obsession with control, you know, that's why Dr. Fascist is a government doctor and not in private practice. He doesn't heal people. Mm-hmm. He doesn't cure people. He doesn't even see people. He's a paper pusher. He's a geek. All right? He's the world's best paid geek. He's an incredibly dangerous geek, but nonetheless.
He doesn't treat COVID patients, for example.
Of course not.
He created the disease that caused it all, but he doesn't treat COVID patients, you know, which is where I would say, you know, I've literally treated more COVID-19 patients successfully more than any doctor on the planet, over 15,000. Yeah. By the way, touching on God, certainly a belief in God's important. And I thought about this for decades, literally, and I thought, how do you, what we need, a unifying definition of a God. So I thought about how to word that, a unifying definition of God that even an atheist could believe in. And here's what I come up with.
Okay.
Here's what
I'm curious.
Come up with. This is the lowest common denominator reality-based definition of the word God. The incomprehensible, non-human, whatever that led to reality, the universe, space, and time, we should agree to call it God.
Yeah,
that's a definition
like
applies
think,
to it applies to all religions, but it also applies to atheists because Lord knows they need a God too.
No, it sounds like I think Einstein's definition is fairly close to that, if I remember, and I could be wrong, but it sounds familiar. That's pretty good.
Well, I think too you have to decide: do you believe that there's God, and then there's a source of energy to connect yourself to God? Because if you can decide that those are two separate things, then you're more likely to bring an atheist to realize who God is traditionally, because now they have a way to physically connect the two. That is, in my opinion, I think you can have, we have God, which I believe in God, and then there's the source of prayer and how intensely your faith is and how well you've learned to connect that source to God is your energy source to him, like your connection, your personal relationship.
I would add one thing because during the break, you had a commercial that read that talked about the Declaration of Independence and what I call the great lie of the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, by Thomas Jefferson. And right. I think that's the biggest mistake of the Declaration of Independence, because all humans, everyone is unique. We're all unique. No, even twins are not the same people. So if we're all unique, that's the exact opposite of being equal. So we should all be treated equally under law, but if I was to rewrite the Declaration of Independence, it would say we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created to be unique, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's actually factually true. Thomas Jefferson was actually wrong. It is not self-evident. We are not all equal. Some people have brown hair. Some people have light-colored hair. Some people are tall. Some people are short. Some people are fat. So there's so many differences in the people. Each person is a unique individual unto itself, and God created us. So we need to rewrite that one sentence, because that is the root of political correctness, I believe, and that's how they – because political correctness is all about groupthink, and we're all the same. And we're not all the same. We're all unique. We're all unique in the eyes of God. And in reality, we're unique. Our memories aren't the same. Our experiences are not the same. We are not all created equal. That is a big lie. By the way,
well,
if you have a pen,
I think
you might want to write this down.
Let me just say this one thing real quick. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to read something. 3012 43rd Street Northwest. 3012 43rd Street Northwest.
No, don't. Don't even go there. Don't even say a word. Don't.
All right.
I'd have to erase the podcast, and I don't want to do that. Don't even say it.
Okay.
Don't even try. No question. Ain't gonna happen. I'll have to take you off the show. No. Don't even do that again. No. Don't get me kicked off the air. All right. What I want to say though is I think you missed part of the Declaration of Independence when I talk about it. When I say that everybody's different, I do say that everybody's different. You know, we're all, but we're created equal in the sense that we all have the same birthright. We all are human beings. We all have, you know, what we are endowed with in terms of our natural rights. That's what I think Jefferson's talking about.
Well, what he meant and what it actually says are two different things. Yes, we should all be treated equally under the law, but it's actually literally, words have meanings. It says all men are created equal. If we were all created equal, all 8 billion all people on the planet would all look exactly the same, talk exactly the same. It's just a lot. It's just fundamentally a lot.
We're created in terms of our rights. We're equal, but we're not equal beings.
We are not equal.
Yeah.
We are all unequal. It's just wrong. It's just fundamentally wrong. It's a lie. But lawyers, that's what they do. You know, Thomas Jefferson was a lawyer. Lawyers are professional liars, and they wrote the lie into the Declaration of Independence. So if it was up to me, we would rewrite that part.
I'm in here, Jim. I think what you're talking about in essence, is the issues between egalitarianism and equality. And
yep.
And those are two completely separate issues that are confused by the PC communists.
Yeah, you're thinking equal outcomes. We're not talking about equal outcomes where we're all made to be the same by being equally oppressed. You know, we all have equal rights.
That's
in other words, by creation.
That's their excuse to force the communism on us, though. It's their force.
Yeah.
It's the, it gives them their excuse to force the whole communist worldview on us. And so I don't know. I think we should just
change. No, that's
change
okay.
It
no, it's a valid question. I just disagree with the way you look at it, and that's perfectly fine. That happens, you know, all the time. You know, but the way I look at it very simply, there's a difference between equal outcomes and equal opportunities. The difference between all of us being endowed with the same, you know, rights, the natural rights, you know, by our creator, as opposed to being of equal status. We're not, because some people are born to rich families, some to poor, some to, you know, people are born all over the world. To different families, to different places, different circumstances. That's not equal. But the rights that we have, you know, the rights of being a human being, of having, you know, the natural rights. Now, whether a country recognizes it or not, of course, is a completely different thing too. So, yeah, I want to get on to the evil side, the dark side, the godless side, the side of you know, I'm sure it's the devil, you know, and the worst forces that are in the universe have brought about these people. And one of them is the Club of Rome. And this is, I took a website here. This is howardnima.com. I have no idea who he is, but he's got a lot of stuff on this one particular page. February 12, 2022, the Club of Rome. And he says, to describe the main goal of the Club of Rome in one word, that word would be depopulation. The members are all elitists, from the Rockefellers to the Gates. All members are staunch Malthusians, dedicated to radically reducing the population of the world. I finally learned what Malthus was saying. He said that people are naturally going to kill themselves just by living. He's a weird guy. Anyway, the article says, despite the fact that many members are billionaire industrialists who are among the worst polluters and environmental rapists on Earth, since the club's founding in 1968, the organization has published and promoted hundreds of books and materials promoting their agenda to supposedly, quote, save the Earth from overpopulation and resource depletion by using pollution and climate change as a Bernaysian, I'm not sure who that is, cry to rally the masses. So in other words, the problem with Earth is people. It's us. And I'm going to quote one more thing here. Talking about from one of the books here, this is page 75, The First Global Revolution by Alexander King and Bertrand Schneider of the Club of Rome, 1991, said, in searching for a common enemy against whom we can unite, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. In their totality and their interactions, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which must be confronted by everyone together. But in designating these dangers as the enemy, we fall into the trap, which we have already warned readers about, namely mistaking symptoms for causes. All these dangers are caused by, here we go, human intervention in natural processes. In other words, we're not natural to the earth. We're not supposed to be here. All right. And it is only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy then is humanity itself. Comments?
I agree. They say that if we did, they say that if they did release the resources that they currently hold from us, that they would sustain life for a little while, but then we would just continue to populate and outgrow that amount that they've released at that point. They've been doing this for generations, putting roads in, putting buildings up, building cities, mm-hmm. limiting our resources to a point to where even if we wanted to go back now, it would, there's so many levels of pesticides and poison and everything that is in this planet that their plan's working perfectly. Now the question is, have we woken up quick enough to reverse it to the point of where we can stop it in its tracks? And that I'm not sure of, because there's a lot of damage done.
Yeah, but we're living longer. You know, it's one of the contradictions that we're the most polluted, the most fat, the most, you know, medicated, the most everything you can think of, the worst possible food, and yet we're living longer. How does that work out? Doctors?
Well, that all ends in because of the great mass poisoning. The average lifespan is going to go way down over the next 2 years.
Okay.
Because of the mass poisoning.
Jim?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, you're dealing with changes of slopes of survival. So it at any one point in time, you know, it's not a contradiction of what you're saying, Greg,
okay.
Because you're looking at a and compared with a slope of velocity.
Huh. Let me give you another section.
I mean, you know, my personal belief is I believe billions of people are going to die over the next 2 years, which has never happened before in human history ever. World War II, around 200 million people died, so we're talking about a tenfold higher death toll. It's never happened, so it's easy to predict we're going to have the greatest depression in human history in the coming next 2 years or so.
Let me bring John into this. Go ahead, Lindsay, then I want to bring John. I got a question for him.
Just a question. Are you saying, Ben, that are we too late? Like you said,
we're too late. We can't stop the mass poisoning. It's already happened. Over half the planet's already been poisoned. These, you call them kill shots, suicide shots, clot shots, slow acting lethal injections, genetic juice, whatever name you want to give it. We know it's poison. The only question, you know, Luc Montagné said 100% of people who took one shot would be dead in 3 years. So if he's right, then billions of people are dying in the next 2 years. And so hopefully he's wrong. But honestly, everything I've read, which, you know, that's all I do is read about this every day for the past 2 years, I think he's right. And I think it may not be 100% of people, but even if it's only 10% of people, that's still more people than have ever died in world history. So also, you know, basically everything keeps getting worse until we get this poison ban, because as long as we're poisoning the masses, how can anything get better? It can't. So until we get all these brainwashed retards out of power with their PC commie insane views that poison is a vaccine, you know, they follow fake Fauci science. They think men can get pregnant, men can have babies, people can change their sex, and they think poison's a vaccine. It's not. So until all those people are gone, which the good news is most of them are taking the poison themselves, so it's going to be like, you know, Jimmy Jones, they're all taking the Kool-Aid, so they're all suiciding themselves. So eventually they all die, and then it's inevitable the poison has to be banned. It's just a question of how many people are going to die first before we can get it banned, and I think it's probably going to be in the billions.
Wait a minute.
Congressman the other day had a daughter died. His 17-year-old daughter died after taking the poison. And as the elected officials and the famous people start dying, then they're going to start connecting the dots. The next thing that's easy to predict is parents. Mm-hmm. When parents connect the dots and their kid dies, what's going to happen? We're going to start seeing the fake Fauci doctors across America that murdered these children. They're going to get murdered themselves because the parents are going to get mad and want revenge. Once they start connecting the dots and realize what has happened.
But here's the thing, too, though.
Ben, I don't know that a parent has the ability to connect the dots because of the massive cognitive dissonance. We talked about this on the webinar last night with Pierre and Corey and with Paul Merrick. There's three levels of cognitive dissonance. The first one, and I think that every physician in the United States of America has, the first level is, okay, I got the shot, me as a physician, not me. Dr. Smith got the shot. Dr. Smith cannot take that shot back. Dr. Smith made a personal and a professional commitment to take that shot. Can't reverse it. Okay, there's cognitive dissonance there. Dr. Smith will not be able to look at data objectively because he already drank the Kool-Aid and can't take it back. The second level of cognitive dissonance is, I persuaded all my family, my daughters. I pressed on everybody. I know doctors that walk around in public in this community in Pensacola that rail on people to go get the vaccine and assault people. I know physicians assault people verbally on the street that they think they're not vaxxed. So. The next level of cognitive dissonance is
can I meet one? Can you bring one on the show?
Third cognitive dissonance is, you know, look at how many of my patients I've killed and maimed. I got to keep this lie going forever, or I'm going to be screwed medically, legally. That's the third, and I'll go to a fourth spiritual level of cognitive dissonance. I killed a lot of people. How am I going to explain this to God? And I did it because I had to keep collecting my paycheck.
Yep, you're absolutely right, Jim. I'll jump out. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to add one more bit of cognitive dissonance to what Jim just said. I had a number of physicians on my podcast, on my show. Dr. Roger Schwelt, who is the guy who runs MedCram, which has over a million subscribers on YouTube. And he's a pulmonary specialist. He has four different specialties, but he's a pulmonary specialist and a critical care specialist. And I had Dr. Scott Jensen on the show, a physician from Minnesota who's running for governor. And when I shared with them the data about the comorbidity and that the number one comorbidity was influenza and that the strain potentially was not in the PCR test and that they may have missed that diagnosis, the cognitive dissonance was stunning watching them see this data, like, because they didn't have a preview of it before we did the show. And when I shared the data with them, this is on camera, they were visibly shocked. And to what you're saying, Jim, that this realization that they may have been fooled and that their patients may have had a co-infection, and now we know that the number one comorbidity is over 450,000 deaths that have both COVID and influenza PNI. So I think that part of the cognitive dissonance that you're pointing out is very, very powerful. And this notion that they could have been fooled in so many ways at this stage in their career is somewhat devastating personally to each one of them. And to have patients that they may have lost because they didn't realize that they had a co-infection and they didn't treat them with Xofluza, it's devastating. And I've had these doctors on my show, and when I showed them the data from the CDC, they were like really shaken, like visibly shaken from it. So I think what Dr. Thorpe is saying here is really important for people to understand that it's hard for people to accept this different narrative that we've been talking about here. It's very, very hard to see through all of the hype and all, you know, the other stuff.
Part of what Jim was saying is that people have to deny everything they've done. In order for them to accept what we're saying, they have to realize that what they've done was wrong, and they may have killed their own kids, or they bring them to the vax doctor. They may have, killed friends' kids. They say, well, you better get the vax, or you can't come play with Johnny, you know, and then the kid goes home and says, I have to get the vax, you know, and then they go to school, and they're giving it to him without parents' permission. All these things are going on. There's a lot of things that are happening now in this mass psychosis, and this is going to be, we're at a critical period in our history, as we're going to find out, but the cognitive dissonance angle is unbelievably important. And this is what I wanted to ask, Lindsay and some of the other folks about, as to why this is happening on a spiritual and a mental level, that people really, they have to abandon their humanity. You know, you almost have to adopt the characteristics of a sociopath. Now, we know who the sociopaths are, Dr. Fascist, you know, the World Council, the economic folks, the billionaires, the elites, all those people. In order to be an elite, you almost have to be a sociopath because you can't care. You can't have any human concern or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. So now we get to the doctors. Now, there are sociopathic doctors that are just following orders. We know how that works. And there are doctors that are doing it because they think they have to, but they've got the conflict. So let's reach the doctors that have the conflict. Let's reach the people that are doing this. You see that video of the CVS guy who is, someone went up and said, what's in the, what do you got in the vaccine? What are the ingredients? And he didn't know. I said, well, why are you giving it? Well, I have to give it. And then he gave up his job, I think, and tossed his lab coat and walked out. I don't know if that was staged or what. But the thing is, there are people at different levels. You know, the sociopaths will follow orders, and then the conscious people will question. They're going to have the real conflicts. So how do we reach the people with the conflicts? That's where I think our best job is, our best best.
That's the catch
way to reach
too,
them.
Because the doctors that bought into the narrative that it was safe and effective and that gave it to patients, they're legally captured, because if they now admit that they poison their patients, then they open themselves up to malpractice lawsuits and or to potentially lose their license.
There's
so
a damn good question.
Do that.
Where's the malpractice? Where's the malpractice lawsuits?
It's selfishness and cowardice pandemic. That's what we need. We need patients who are abandoned by their doctors across America. When, you know, if you were a patient and you got sick with COVID and you called your doctor and they wouldn't treat you, that's patient abandonment. That's malpractice. That doctor should be sued.
Wait, and we've asked this before, but I keep forgetting about it. But why aren't there malpractice lawsuits? If we're using, quote, experimental medicine, does that make you not only immune from liability but immune from malpractice as well? Is that
can I can answer. I can
Who's
answer
got,
that.
Jim? Yeah.
It's the CARES Act, the CARES and CAPS Act. They have a limited amount, and that was purposefully enacted. You know, you're all looking back to the COVID community core, the tens of billions of dollars, you know, that have pushed this fake, politically correct, lethal information out there, pushing the vaccine. And the federal government did it. They also passed the CARES Act, which, as your attorneys will tell you, all of the attorneys you've mentioned on this show, that the CARES Act also provides not quite as much immunity, legal immunity, as the pharmaceutical companies have, but it provides a lot. And that's why but all that immunity is flushed down the toilet when legally, and this is what the legal experts tell me, including my beautiful bride, Maggie, that there is no sovereign immunity or any type of immunity with the CARES Act or with a pharmaceutical company when there's been criminal laws broken. And that's proceeded with our patient betrayal article with 19 authors, including the famous Dr. Ben Marble, famous Brian Artis, and including many other, including four attorneys. We delved into the medical legal issues. We had the legal lines trace every single publication by these agencies showing, documenting collusion, fraud, and RICO violation.
So you know, what's that lawsuit called when we have a guest who just hung up? She was here. Where'd she go? Brian.
We got it.
We had Dr. Elizabeth Villette. I'm not sure how to pounce her name. She was just on the line. She left. Maybe, Brian, you can give her a quick shout back. And let's get her back here. Right. Yeah, let's get her back on the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, Greg. Really appreciate your guest. I know I didn't recognize the voice. I hopped on late, but Ms. Horton, Lindsay, I think she's with Gulf Breeze Energetics, GBE, and I love the addition of her to the show because she brings in this aspect of medicine and medical care that the Rockefellers essentially blocked out and burned away 100 years ago.
That's why I asked her. That's why I asked her. Lindsay, you got to be on every week now, okay, if you can. We need you every week.
I mean, hey, right. Dr. Bleed, I have somebody answered this time. Good morning.
Well, no, there is. I'm the producer as well as the host. So what I do is kind of introduce you and then bring you on. But there's no call screener. It's me. And if I know you, this is why everybody's number ahead of time, so I know who's calling. So I'm gonna let Brian introduce you, and let's come back next week so we can get you for more time because we only have about 26 minutes right now, which is just enough time to say hi and get a basic introduction. And so we'll sort of hold up whatever we're talking about, which is fascinating. Brian, you want to introduce our new guest?
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Dr. Elizabeth Lee Valit. She's phenomenal. She's actually got a press release. I asked her to come on this panel today to update us on something that came out 2 days ago. She's been working hard with the military, been helping to expose for the last year and a half with the rest of us, trying to expose, and did a great job on how hospitals, in my appreciation, how hospitals are being incentivized massively underneath this Biden administration and the handling of COVID-19, disgustingly and criminally. But there are things going on in the military. I want Dr. Elizabeth Lee Valit and her perspective and the work she's done with multiple people in the military that she's representing right now. I would like her to tell the world what it is they're working on and just released.
Yep. Welcome
to
the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Artis. Thank you, Greg. Really appreciate the chance to be with your team. We really have been in the trenches discussing with helping the military in their legal defense. We I have Truth for Health Foundation, which is a public charity, and we do legal defense grants to defend human and civil rights secured by law, which is what a public charity is allowed to do under the IRS codes. And mm-hmm. so our military service members, unbeknownst to most of the public, are having their constitutional rights trampled upon in ways that are even more egregious and unconscionable than what we've seen in the civilian world, because what happens is if they question the lawfulness of this order to receive mm-hmm. the experimental shot, because there is no FDA-approved shot available on any military installation, any ordering system for the DOD, anywhere in the world. Hmm. And if they question that, they are then charged with misconduct. Some that we've defended have even been charged with criminal conduct. They try to start a court-martial for those over 6 years' service. They are entitled to a board of inquiry or a court-martial procedure, and the command starts that process, drumming out experienced, highly qualified, exemplary officers and enlisted people to get rid of those who are questioning the order.
Let me jump in just for a sec, because this is in the interest of time, because I'm going to ask you this anyway. How is it that the same government that issues the mandate can also declare it legal? That seems to me a conflict, that the responsibility for determining the legality of an order, you know, rests with the person that's carrying it out. And if they're wrong, that they disobey a lawful order, they got a problem. But if they disobey an unlawful order, which this obviously is, then they're the ones that write. How is it the government can declare their illegal orders lawful and then prosecute and persecute the soldiers for not obeying it?
The very simple answer is the government is lawless on all fronts right now.
That makes sense.
Our government is totally lawless. And in fact,
bingo,
the cases that we've been involved in,
bingo,
the military, the court cases, the courts are also colluding to ignore the fundamental question about the lawfulness of mandating an experimental COVID shot. It is unlawful to do that. It violates everything that all of us have been talking about since they talked about rolling out these shots under the EUA. Nuremberg Code, medical ethics, UCMJ, military regulations themselves prevent the use of an experimental vaccine in a mandate. And yet that's what they're doing. The command, and it's worse than that in the military, because civilians can say, okay, fine, I'm not going to, I may risk my job, but I'm not going to risk my life. So they just don't get it. They leave the job.
Mm-hmm.
In the military, you can't just leave your job, number one. Number two, mm-hmm. we have had specific patients. I was literally on the phone as a witness to one of our legal defense grants for 5 hours at Fort Benning, Georgia, earlier in May, when he was being taken for a forced psychiatric detention and threatened with forcible psychiatric medication. You don't have to go to the Soviet gulag to see the weaponization of psychiatry. It's taking place on our military bases under the cloak of military secrecy, and the public doesn't know about it, and that's what our mission has been. We are exposing what command is doing that is harming our troops, affecting our military readiness, affecting our military in the Air Force, dating back to 2015. Now they're purging pilots who don't want to be vaccinated. It takes billions of dollars to train these pilots. We've got people with 10, 15, almost 20 years experienced combat aviators that are being drummed out of the military because they refuse the vaccine that affects their brain function and cognitive skills and aviation safety. What is going on in the military is absolutely devastating.
We had Captain Tom Stewart last week. We've had Jordan Carr, who's an Air Force captain, intelligence. She had to leave, and we talked about the physiology of flying, where the oxygen depletion and everything else that goes into it. My question is the same way.
Exactly.
Right. Why are they taking the leaders and getting rid of them? And are they using COVID as an excuse to weed out the leaders of the military, or is it something they're just obsessed with doing anyway? What do you think's behind this? Because obviously not health.
Well, there's no speculation on it. General McInerney has spoken out on it many times. In 2005, China's head, the equivalent of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in China, declared that China was undertaking asymmetric warfare rather than kinetic warfare with bombs and bullets. And asymmetric warfare meant cyber warfare, bioweapons, which you all have all been talking about on your show, and we've all been screaming about that as the virus and the vaccine are bioweapons.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that this is by design. You'll notice China's military did not get these shots.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. military, U.S. first responders across the board, doctors, nurses, firefighters, EMTs, across the board, our entire emergency response system, including the military, has been damaged by these shots. So this is asymmetric warfare. This is command who have sold out the principles of our military to stand for the oath to the U.S. Constitution. They are taking an oath to the political agenda, and this began under Obama. There were 120 senior military leaders purged under the Obama administration, because they answered the question that no, they would not fire on American citizens, and that their oath is to the Constitution. That purge began under the Obama administration. It is taking place on steroids at warp speed with Obama and the shadow government behind Biden. So what's happening is they're purging Christians. They are purging conservatives.
Yeah, you're hitting all the
And they're
there.
They're purging the thinkers.
So can we assume that the military officers now are the people who would fire on Americans, the senior military?
Well, I'll let you draw your conclusion, given the purge.
I already
that's
did
going
that.
On.
That's why I asked the question.
Well, I think it's very clear that the people that they want remaining in the U.S. military, that they are keeping, are those who submitted to unlawful order to be vaccinated, those who are following orders, not following the Constitution, and those for whom a job was more important than their oath of office and their oath to their country and the men under their command. Listen to what Dr. Peter Chambers is saying about this. He took an oath to the Constitution, and he took an oath to protect the men and women under his command. And he stood up to the unlawful order and told a two-star general, no, sir, that's an unlawful order. And those who are doing that are being purged from the military.
Yeah, I think other people want to ask a question. I better go to the panel
here. I would like to chime in real quick. Dr. Vliet's being diplomatic, and I'm just going to do my Dr. Obvious routine. The chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marxist Milley, the man's a traitor. He should be arrested and in prison on trial. So starting from the top going down, he is a traitor, period.
Fair enough. This is how we talk around here, Dr. Vliet. We're pretty bold.
All I can say to that is I listened to him speak at the National Memorial Day concert. And I was practically screaming at the TV, how can you say those words about an oath to the U.S. Constitution with what you have done to our military and with this unlawful order?
He's a sociopath, that's how.
Dr. Vliet, this is Jim Thorpe. I'm a physician and former military OBGYN doc, but I have I won't mention her name, a lieutenant colonel, currently active duty, a physician, on our wavelength. And she attended a senior military CME meeting. This was a major meeting with some major higher-up officers, and I won't mention any names. But the officer said in public at the meeting that at this point in time, we will physically restrain you and force the vaccine on you. And if that doesn't work, then we will secretly give you the vaccine that we want to give you under the guise of a different vaccination label.
Oh, I'm sure that's happening, and I know the person you're talking about because I'm working closely with her, and she and I talk regularly.
I think I know, too.
She has been public in Senator Johnson's hearings. She has gone public in participating in writing and drafting and signing the letter to the FAA warning as a flight surgeon about the damage to our pilots and the damage to the flying public safety as well as military safety. So I don't think there's any holding back on what this experienced physician, military officer, has tried to do to warn the public and the leadership. It's been very obvious that there are courageous people like her. She's under federal whistleblower protection and still being persecuted in the military.
We actually wrote a bill.
Back to my point. They are lawless.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? I want to ask a question
of
Dr. Vliet and or Dr. Thorpe. It's a simple question. What, when the commander-in-chief is a traitor and when the chairman and the joint chiefs of the staff is a traitor, what are the military rules for the military to arrest those guys and take them out of the equation? There would seem like there would be some sort of rule for that, but I don't know. I never served, but you guys have, so maybe you can answer that question.
What's the order of succession? I think it's what you're talking about.
Well, when the leadership what are the rules for taking out corrupt leadership?
I can't answer that. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not in the military. I know that there are rules for that, but I think some of our military people who are either currently serving or just retired would be good people to have on to discuss those very issues. I think they're critical issues. The public needs to know.
Yeah. See, I don't think the military can do it. My solution is very simple, that the battleground states that put forward Trump electors, you disqualify the Brandon electors, you put forward the Trump electors, the electoral count goes from 316 Trump, 222 Brandon, and you have to replace the insurrectionist that's in the White House right now. And by that action, if they're still regarding president as commander-in-chief, then he can then fire most of the military or have them arrested. And you have a real attorney general that can then prosecute them. So it's really got to come from the top. It really all comes down to the electors to change that electoral count. That's how I see it.
Well, that's exactly right. But not a single battleground state legislators have had the courage to do exactly as you just said. That's General McInerney's point that he makes repeatedly. All of what is happening that is tyrannical and lawless today goes back to the fact that the election was stolen and has given them carte blanche to overthrow the U.S. Constitution. It's coup d'etat, and he has talked about that in many venues.
He was on the show. We actually had him on the show before the election, and he told us the whole thing. It was going to look good for Trump till about 10 o'clock, then everything was going to get shut down, then the recount would start, and then by the morning, you know, Brandon will appear to have won. So we knew this, you know, a couple of weeks in advance of the situation. Fortunate to have General McInerney on. I'd love to have him on again. I just want to
time to have him back.
Yeah, it would. Absolutely. We need you to have, if you can, come back next week for much longer. Or maybe we can do a separate hour, because the things you're talking about are just fascinating. And I want to just introduce you to what we do here. I don't know how much Brian told you, Dr. Artis, but we are the source of citizen legislation. We are the first radio show that actually writes bills. And two bills I'd like to introduce to you, to your foundation, when I find out more about it. One of them would put full product liability back on vaccine makers, and the second one would end big tech censorship. Now, is that something that you could help with? Would you be interested in learning about, or is that outside what you guys do?
Oh, well, those are definitely things we've been speaking up on, fighting for. We are a 501c3 public charity who cannot take political action. We take advocacy, legal defense grants, and we do educational programs, and we take positions on all of this. But as far as helping to sponsor bills for legislation, that needs to be a 501c4 or a political action group.
Or a for-profit corporation like X-Ray.
We're the educational arm, and the legal defense grant arm. How's that?
Okay. No, that sounds good. We'll be talking off the air. Anybody else have any questions? Or Dr. Philippe, do you have more updates on this? This is absolutely fascinating.
Well, what I want to leave your listeners with, first of all, we are doing in Truth and Health Foundation as part of our citizen preparedness, citizen advocacy, public good work. Every Thursday night at 8 o'clock Eastern time via Zoom, we are doing Faith Over Fear, Roadmap to Recovery seminar series, teaching Americans what you need to be doing, what we as individual citizens need to do to take control of our health, our personal safety, our family safety, home safety, community, legislative process, criminal complaints that can be filed. This is a very action-oriented series of steps that people can take to prepare for the chaos that's coming so that we go back to our American spirit and our American ingenuity and stop looking to the government to solve all the problems, because clearly it's the source of the problems. So that's one thing I want to let your listeners know.
Okay.
The second thing, let me just make this point for your listeners.
No, that's fine.
I want to put some numbers in perspective. There was outrage on the left over the Vietnam War and the deaths of Americans. And all of us were concerned about the deaths of Americans. 58,000 Americans died in the 10 years of the Vietnam War, which the public was outraged about at the time. We have just had 61,000 millennials die in less than 12 months following the vaccine rollout. In less than 1 year, more millennials, the same age group as those called to serve in Vietnam and in our military, 25 to 44. So let that sink in. Not one word do you hear about that except from people like Edward Dowd, who assembled a group of insurance industry analysts to analyze the CDC data by age group and deaths and compile that data and dig into what the CDC is covering up for the American public.
Let's get John into this, because that's something that's his ballpark too, is numbers. Dr. Vliet, did you have more? Did you want to continue on that? I'm just trying to get
That across the board, we're seeing deaths in the younger, healthy, working age population, military age population that exceed the 10 years of the Vietnam War. I want the public to have that in perspective. We're seeing damage to our military physically, brain damage, heart damage, cancers, all sorts of medical problems, damage to existing military, plus the purges. Our military readiness is at some of the lowest point we've seen in my adult life.
Is it just numbers, or is it the quality, the health, all of the above? Is it the morale?
All of the above.
Is it the lack of leadership, as we've talked about? You know, they've weeded out the leaders, so the next generation of folks from the military are going to be weaker officers in general, more compliant. And to me, it's the zombie apocalypse. I mean, these are the zombies.
It's
the zombie
every
troops.
One of those factors you just labeled, and it's the woke conversion of West Point and the service academies. We're defending some of the cadets in the suit on against the service academy mandates. It's the whole decimation of the ethos, duty, honor, country, faith in God, oath to the Constitution. The whole ethos that has governed our military since our founding has been undermined since Obama took office in 2008. And it has been undermined and destroyed on steroids under this administration. And so next generations of leadership are affected, recruiting is down, retention is down, morale is down, they're threatening service members with weaponization of psychiatry, people are feeling trapped.
What's
They're
that?
Purging conservatives, Christians, and thinkers. At every level of all the things you just talked about, our military is being decimated.
What's weaponization of psychiatry?
Peter Bragan.
That is threatening people with psychiatric detention and forcible medication.
Red flag law.
For disagreement on a political agenda or questioning an order, and it's happening across all branches of the service right now.
That's exactly what happened. And Peter Bragan is called the father of international psychiatry, the conscience of psychiatry, because this is exactly what he took out in the 60s and the 70s, was this institutionalized, horrible, inhumane psychiatric surgical procedures of frontal lobotomy and many others. And he single-handedly eradicated that from the world. And that's exactly what's come back, what I think Dr. Vliet is talking about here. It's exactly what they're doing now. And what they've done with physicians in the hospital systems, really, this is not much different. You know, a physician in any hospital, if you're a hospital employee and you don't play games with what the administration wants to do, this is what they do to you. They send you to a formal. They have third-party collaborations with psychiatrist centers all over the country. They'll say, well, you know, Dr. Smith is, you know, doing this and doing that, and a rabble-rouser, label them and call them psychiatrically unsound or maybe on drugs or maybe an alcohol problem. So we're going to send this doctor to this shame you course, you know, out of state, and it's going to go on the doctor's record. So the doctor can reflect on, okay, do I really want to fight City Hall or fight the administration of the hospital over this ethical legality, or do I just want to let it slide? This is what they've been doing to physicians for 20 years.
How about the military physicians?
Exactly.
Are they leaving
right.
too?
I've been.
Go ahead.
It's called sham peer review, and AAPS, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, has been fighting that for the whole time I've been a member, and I've been a member for about 28 years. So you're exactly right, and that they've done many programs on that. It's one of the causes of physician suicide. But let me bring up another point. You're correct, and I know Peter Bragan well. I have worked closely with him. He's also on our advisory council for the foundation, and his fight against frontal lobotomy, the surgery that you're talking about, we have basically frontal lobe syndrome as vaccine-induced brain injury going on right now, and very few people are talking about it. I just did a radio show on it. We've done a program for our seminar series on it. But these COVID shots are causing the same frontal lobe syndrome that resulted from the frontal lobotomy surgery that Dr. Bragan fought years ago. And
is that
well
engineered?
In terms of the,
you think that's engineered or accidental? Do you think engineered or accidental? What do you think?
Well, I mean, look, you guys have been talking on your show for the whole time about the engineering of this virus and the vaccine. Of
that's
course,
why I'm curious.
They've known the damage was civil, and they've known, and that's part of the weaponization of it. But my point is that the frontal lobe syndrome is part of the brain damage when they designed a vaccine that crosses the blood-brain barrier and causes inflammation with lipid nanoparticles, microblood clots, and the spike protein within the central nervous system. When you have the frontal lobe damage, you lose critical thinking skills, and you lose the ability to sequentially engage in tasks. It affects judgment, emotional volatility, a lot of things that we're seeing in the public right now. But the military service members, particularly those in flight training, are impaired enough that they can't continue their training. That's what many of the military flight surgeons have been speaking out about. We're losing pilots
exactly
after
right.
vaccination because they cannot think. They can't complete the complex task of the training. I think that's part of why we're seeing the crashes. Well, there were three in Southern California within 1 week. Just
wow.
a couple of weeks ago, a fighter jet FA-18, a Seahawk helicopter, and a Marine Osprey that killed six Marines, and the pilot of the FA-18 was killed. And I think part of it is the vaccine damage to the cognitive processing means that pilots, they did before they got the shot. Then you've got limbic system structures damaged, and you've got the cerebellar and brainstem structures damaged. I mean, this is a nightmare that's going on, and neurologists are pretending like, oh, I have no idea. Well, we're seeing so many more people with strokes and falls, and what's going on? My own neurosurgeon said, Lee, I can't get over it. We're seeing, we're being called to do so many craniotomies lately. I said, yeah, it's the vaccine.
I hate to do this to you, but we're actually out of time. So if you can come back next or sometime, anytime,
well,
no, but if you have an hour, you know, to give us, you know, during the week other than our time, but this is, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursdays is when the, our world's greatest doctor panel meets. And it is so nice to meet you. I think of this as like the preview to our discussion. This is fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on.
That's great. Thank you for having me. You all have a great weekend, and we'll keep up the fight for America.
Absolutely. I want to find out about this foundation. Now I'm really curious. So I have more questions than answers at this point. Anyway, thank you all, everybody. It's been a great discussion. Share with everybody.
We'll talk about truthforhealth.org.
Truthforhealth.org. There we go. Okay.
You're awesome, Dr. Lee. Thanks for coming on. Thank you for having her on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. Say goodbye to everybody. 1, 2, 3.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Hey, send me John's cell phone number.
I will. Don't worry about it. All right. Greg Penglis for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenAction. Our doctrine just keeps improving. Also, if you want to find the legislation at www.writeyourlaws.com, that's writeyourlaws.com. And I'll be back tomorrow morning at our regular time. No, actually, I'm not. Tomorrow morning's Friday, so 6 in the morning Central Time. We start a little bit earlier on Fridays, and we'll talk to you then.